Take your seats, please. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the August 16th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I wondered if you'd please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May we have the roll call of members, please.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present.
We have a full complement, and we have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We have a couple of things tonight. We do have a proclamation for the Ithaca Health Alliance Free Clinic. I don't think we have anyone here to accept it, but I want to talk about the fact that the Ithaca Free Clinic has now been open for 10 years, serving our community, and has provided medical and holistic health care at no cost to over 8,000 uninsured and underinsured members of the community, and has helped over 2,600 community members reduce medical debt by nearly $500,000 and provided 200-plus educational programs to the community at large. Therefore, as chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, I do proclaim August 17, 2016, as the Ithaca Health Alliance Free Clinic Day in Tompkins County.
All right.
We'll get a hand for that. Also, we have a really nice thing to talk about, one of our important staff members tonight. And I wondered if I could ask Patricia Carey to come up. Could you come up to the podium? Patricia Carey is our Commissioner of Social Services. I don't think Judge Rell is here tonight. Is anybody? If any of you didn't know it, on August 2nd at the Child Welfare League of America's 2016 National Conference in Orange County, California, our Commissioner, Patricia Carey, was awarded the Children and Family Futures 2016 National Collaborative Excellence Award. The award recognized the work that Patricia has done to create and constantly improve our family treatment court, first as the DSS's legal administrator and later as commissioner by working collaboratively with the other driving force behind our family treatment court, who is County Judge John Rowley, along with other multiple community leaders. Judge Rowley did join Patricia at the awards event and was recognized as a fellow nominee. We were reminded of the benefits of that collaboration when Tompkins County became one of only four jurisdictions in the United States that received a prevention and family recovery grant from the Doris Duke Foundation. With that grant support, Patricia, Judge Rowley, and their staffs have implemented numerous improvements to strengthen their collaboration with other community organizations and stakeholders and to improve services to participants. In making the award, the Children and Family Futures Organization recognized Patricia's success in improving collaboration among the child welfare, substance abuse treatment, and judicial systems, demonstrating leadership to improve outcomes for families affected by substance use disorders, and improving the delivery of services to families, groups, and communities. Patricia, we're very proud of you, and we're so pleased that you received this national well-deserved honor bestowed by your peers. And we're grateful for the service and that you and your dedicated staff provide to our community by helping those in need with a helping hand.
I just want to remind everyone that I am just one person, but there are hundreds of people who are working very hard every day at the Department of Social Services to look at the people we serve and identify what they need, and we're out there trying to get them services as best as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are going to need an executive session tonight to discuss pending litigation. We'll move next to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that any member of the public has to speak to the legislature for up to 3 minutes on any issue. There is a time clock on the wall to my left, and that will count down the 3 minutes. At the end, there'll be a ring, something like a telephone ring. We'll ask you to please, if you're still speaking, conclude at that point. If you want to speak, we ask that you fill out one of the blue cards at the back of the room and pass it up here. By signing that card, you're agreeing to our rules. You're agreeing to the three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would intend to cite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time from one person to another is not permitted. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. Before we start, let me remind everyone that there are emergency exits to my right in the back of the room, to my left in the front of the room, and if there was a fire, please don't use the elevator. Also, please silence any electronic devices that you may have, like cell phones, and that goes for legislators as well. So I have some blue cards, and we'll start. The first one I have is Don Scuck, and when you come to the microphone, will you please state your municipality. And our rules here are that we don't respond to comments of privilege of the floor when someone is speaking or directly after they speak. However, later we will have privilege of the floor for legislators who may choose to comment on comments. Don Scuck.
Hello. My name is Don Scuck. My last name is spelled S-C-U-T-T, and I live in the town of Dryden. I don't normally speak from a prepared statement, but I feel what I'm speaking about tonight is kind of important, so I'm going to read some bullet points to you. I am here to address an issue you will be discussing later tonight. That issue is taking away the right to vote for sheriff from the citizens of Tompkins County. I am here in particular to address the two representatives from the town of Dryden, Districts 14 and 13, Mr. Michael Lane and my local representative, Martha Robertson. I need to remind you that you represent the town of Dryden. On this issue, you do not represent the citizens of the county as a whole. You do not represent Ithaca. You represent Dryden. I do not know of nor imagine one person from the town of Dryden that has come forward to you and asked you willfully to take away their right to vote. No one that I have spoken to in the town of Dryden has said they want that right taken away. I find it kind of interesting that this issue is coming up in an election year when not one of the sitting board member seats in this room is up for re-election. I call upon my local representatives tonight to make a statement that you will not support any resolution nor local law that takes away the right of citizens of the town of Dryden to exercise their right to vote. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Don. Bonnie Scott. After Bonnie, I have Rebecca Phillips.
Good evening. My name is Bonnie Scott, and I reside in the town of Dryden. I am opposed to the decision to make the sheriff an appointed rather than an elected position. Besides the most fundamentally important reason that you never, ever take the right to vote from an American, I offer yet another one. The sheriff should not be beholden to any political party in current government. This position is elected by all of the voting constituents in the county. He or she answers to them. If we the people feel that he or she is not doing a good job, we vote them out. If the position were to become an appointed position, it could easily be manipulated for political gain, an appointment made as a favor for something in return. I say it could. They could be appointed to their position based on common political stances and would more likely make decisions with the viewpoints of their superiors in mind, rather than in the best interests of the county population and the law. The opportunity for misuse of the very top position in law enforcement in Tompkins County would be compounded by the political swing of the governing body who, in general, would be the supervisor of this position. If a law were being looked at to be revised or a new one put in place, the appointed person more often than not would support the actions of his superiors in order to stay in their good graces and keep his job. Do you not see the danger in this? I recognize the danger in this. An elected sheriff answers directly to the people who put him in office. His or her only job is to worry about things directly related to law and order and providing justice in the name of the law for the people, regardless of political leanings. Keep the sheriff position an elected position. Do not take away our right to vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca Phillips. Then Rocco Lucenti.
Excuse me, I got to put on the change the walking glasses from the
take
reading
your time.
Glasses. And this is my husband. He's my backup plan because my back is not all that good. I'm Rebecca Phillips. I live in the town of Brooktondale, and my husband Samuel. And we're here in regards to the sheriff appointment or versus. My question is why? Why change this position to an appointed one? Is it because the Charter Review Committee had to come up with something to make themselves seem viable in their 10-year review? Or is it because of an underlying agenda? Has the current sheriff done something wrong? Is it because you, the county legislators, do not trust our selection? Or is it because you want power over all, including law enforcement? Do you want to encompass the entire law enforcement community, including the city, towns, and villages throughout Tompkins County? Do you feel that we, the people, are inept, unqualified, and unable to select a qualified individual for sheriff? Do you not trust us enough to make a good and reasonable selection for sheriff? Is our choice to be questioned? If so, then the process and selection as to how you yourselves got to be in the position that you are now is in question. The same people that voted you in, our sheriff, voted you in as county legislators. You question our choice? If our ability to vote in a proper individual for the position of sheriff is in question, then our ability to vote in proper legislators is also in question. And I quote from the sheriffs.org site, the sheriff provides a check and balance as an elected county official directly responsible to the citizens that protects from undue influence from members of the county board or by other county officials. Amen.
Rocco Lucenti and then Paul Ahrens.
Hi, my name is Rocco Lucenti. I'm from the town of Ulysses, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the elected sheriff. And I'm here with petitions from 340 individuals, at least 315 of which, by my rough count, are from Tompkins County, saying they want to retain the elected sheriff, as well as 125 comments that I highly encourage every legislator here to read. You know, some of the concerns that we have heard here, you know, are about a power grab. And I was at the Public Safety Committee meeting. I heard a lot of people get upset when they heard that characterization. And I understand that it is difficult to hear your motives arguably be questioned, and I'm not here to do that. What I would say is that the logic that you have used, that this is too important of a position to elect, that we have to have professional standards, we have to appoint it, what is essentially being said is that we're unqualified to make this choice. We're unqualified to make this decision, and our voices should be subservient to yours. I think with a position like the sheriff, the thing that really is important is checks and balances. The lawmakers and the law enforcers should be separated because it creates more accountability. If one branch is doing something wrong, the other branch can do something about it. And that goes both ways. With an appointed position, I think those of us who are concerned with the police misconduct issues that have arisen in national media recently, we have a real concern there. If an appointee is a friend or an ally of legislators, are those legislators going to be as hard on them, for lack of a better word, as they would, for example, Ken Lansing with this sheriff standoff in Danby? I think that there are real concerns here in terms of checks and balances, and I think there are real concerns with public representation. And I think it's your job as our legislators to understand that one of your primary purposes is to keep things calm in the community, to make sure that people feel they are represented, to make sure that people feel that government is being held accountable, and to make sure that people feel there is transparency. There's no greater degree of transparency than an election, and it represents the greatest check and balance that we have on law enforcement, as well as on the legislature. And I, as well as 340 individuals, would speak in favor of retaining the elected sheriff for that reason. Thank you.
Thank you. Paul Ahrens. Then Herman Sherwood Sitz.
Hello. My name is Paul Ahrens. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I'm also here to talk about whether or not the sheriff should remain elected. I want to start off by stating that Black Lives Matter. I think this needs to be at the forefront of this debate so we don't forget about the communities who are most affected by decisions such as these. I'm from the state of Wisconsin, and as you're likely aware, there was a riot in Milwaukee the other night, resulting from centuries of systemic racism, inequality, and what many are calling police terror in their neighborhoods. One solution many people are calling for is more democracy and community control over the police forces. Why? Accountability. The fact that there is even a discussion about making police forces here less democratic rather than more reveals how out of touch many of our nation's leaders are with the problems facing the vast majority of Americans today. We need more democracy, not less. This should be quite obvious in a nation that prides itself on the merits of freedom. I want us all to think about the implications of this decision. What's going to happen when we make our police officers less accountable to the public? I feel I should point out that Ithaca does not live in a bubble, despite what many people think, and it is not shielded from the problems facing the rest of society. One example is the recent lead contamination found in most, if not all, of the public schools in Ithaca and Tompkins County. What happens to a primarily black and poor community such as Flint, Michigan, can easily happen here to a primarily white and affluent community such as Tompkins County, Ithaca, home of an Ivy League university. If we don't do everything possible to make the police forces more accountable to the community, we may one day see riots here, just as we saw our children poisoned by toxic heavy metals and the lack of proactive thinking. To assume that people can't make the best decision in an election is evidence that we have absolutely failed at creating a democratic republic. And that's the best interpretation. At worst, it's an anti-democratic power grab that seems to be instigated by the increasing public opposition from people of all races who are sick and tired of police terror and are demanding real, practical change. I urge everybody in this room to consider the larger context of this decision, as well as the implications it may have for our future. People can make the right choices. I believe in democracy, not for moral reasons, but for pragmatic reasons. I believe that the only way we can have an adequately functioning government is when the people most affected by these decisions are the people making these decisions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Herman Sherwood Sitz, please, and then Jamie Hendricks.
Hi, my name is Herm Sherwood Sitz. I'm from Norwich, New York. I'm sure you're going to say, you know, this is your county. Why am I here?
This is your privilege. The floor is open to everyone.
This is your county, but it's also my country. I want my grandchildren to have the same rights that I have. And to take the right to vote for the sheriff away from us is just another right that you're chipping away at. I'm doing it for my grandchildren. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Jamie Hendricks, then Amy Foster.
I'm Jamie Hendricks from the town of Trumansburg. I'm here tonight mostly to talk about this from the perspective of democracy. Thus, I completely understand that everyone is very unhappy about what happened at Hornbrook, and there may be some very bad decisions made, and something needs to be done. But should the solution be, and some may be not appreciate the analogy, but in Germany, Hitler also got into power because some people said, You should give more power to this one person because he's going to be able to make better decisions than just in a messy, democratic way that we're all doing it. Because this is what it is really about. If the President of the United States does a poor job, we don't eliminate his office. We vote him out. We don't give him a second term. If a legislator is not doing what we want the legislator to do, again, we vote him out of office. We don't eliminate the district. We don't appoint someone to report to the county administration. We allow people to keep on voting. Now, again, I want to emphasize it. I understand it's done with all good intentions, but we have to look at the downside of eliminating a position. Does that give people an opportunity to vote? And we also have to keep in mind, once it becomes an appointed position, it needs to be overseen by someone. That person that is a supervisor may be overworked, may not have enough time, and may be at all other levels a good person, but just not be able to do the job. And if the position is elected, then at least every 4 years, people can say what they think about it. Now, I understand that some people are unhappy with the sheriff and that we want more people to run for office in this county and that not enough people are running for office. But for those of you who are really concerned about that, I'm willing to walk on a Saturday with you in your neighborhood and knock on the doors and ask people why they don't vote more or why they don't come more to legislator meetings. So let's figure out a way to get people more involved in democracy as opposed to eliminating a position, no matter how well intended. Thank you.
Thank you. I have two more cards. If there's anyone out there who would like to speak, hasn't handed up a card, please fill one out and send it up. Amy Foster and then Deborah Dawson.
My name is Amy. I'm not sure if this is working, sorry. My name is Amy Foster. I live in Freeville. I wanted to come to speak today, and I don't have anything in front of me because I believe in just speaking from the heart. You know, first off, I want to thank our Sheriff's Department for doing a great job.
Could you tip that microphone down a little bit?
Any better?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. My name is Amy Foster. I'm from Freeville, and I believe in speaking from the heart, so I didn't come with anything prepared today. First off, I want to thank our Sheriff's Department for doing a great job in protecting us from the bad people of the world. With that said, I believe this position needs to remain elected because that's what the Constitution has outlined and protects us. Because once you have the sheriff is our protection from the federal government, the state government, people who want to take our rights away. And he is the one who's going to stand and say, no, this is not right. And I think that's why some people, especially in our state government, feel that we shouldn't be able to elect our sheriff is so that they can come in and take away the rights that we hold dear and that we all believe in. You know, it is our job as people to protect ourselves, and that's why the democratic process exists the way it does. And I'm hoping that everyone here realizes how dangerous it will be if we put an appointed person in there that is not going to care about us. He's not, because they're not beholden to us. They're beholden to all of you. And I'm hoping that, you know, you trust the people that elected you enough to elect our sheriff and realize the democratic process exists the way it does. That's all I have.
Thank you. Deborah Dawson.
Good evening. My name is Deborah Dawson. I live in the village of Lansing, and I'm actually here to speak in favor of an appointed sheriff. I spent 30 years on the legal side of federal law enforcement and federal regulatory enforcement, and I saw very few situations in which an elected law enforcement officer was in any way better or more accountable than an appointed one. I don't think we have a constitutional right to vote for the sheriff. We have rights to vote. The county charter says who the elected officials are. The county charter can be changed with a vote by the people. I don't think that this issue is so much about taking away people's right to vote as it is about increasing the accountability of the sheriff. When this debacle occurred in Danby, there was a parade of people that came into this legislature and complained about it, and with good reason. It was an unfortunate incident. But what I think people don't realize is that as the charter is currently set up, there is not a single thing this legislature can do to hold the sheriff accountable. I think that a lot of your concerns could be addressed by having a sheriff who is appointed by the legislature at large. That is, by the 14 individuals that every person in this county voted to elect. I also think that that sheriff could be a direct report to this legislature. And what that means is that he will sit at every meeting along with the three individuals, Mr. Mariani, Jonathan Wood, and Mr. Schneider. And from my observation, I attend a lot of these meetings, those direct reports advise the legislature every bit, if not more, then they take direction from the legislature. I think the whole thrust of this proposal is to make the sheriff more accountable. And I will say this. I think if the sheriff sat in these meetings on a regular basis, he would have more input into the laws and policies that this legislature makes that he's responsible for enforcing. I think that there are two sides to this. You're all focused on my vote, my vote, my vote. I understand that. I'm focused on having a sheriff who's accountable more often than once every 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you. That was my last blue card, so we'll move now to municipal officials, privilege of the floor. I think we have three tonight. Who would like to go first? Looks like we have Dr. Nugan from the City Council, City of Ithaca. Welcome. Before I start, we read with interest in the Ithaca Voice about the competition that you were a part of and the wonderful award that your, I believe, a group won. Do you want to mention anything about that? I think it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so my day job, I'm a programmer by day, and my colleagues and I participated in a fully autonomous hacking competition whose goal is to improve the state of the art in protecting software. And we got second place, which comes with a $1 million prize. It goes to the company, so I don't get a direct benefit from that. But I do want to, you know, point out that Gramatech and other companies in Tompkins County are doing some pretty cutting-edge work.
Congratulations.
I'll just name a couple, just list a couple things. So, and they're both Planning and Economic Development Committee issues, not council at large. Council kind of had a sleepy month. We did a lot of art and capital projects. But at Planning, we passed on to council an amendment or revision to the CTAP program to require some new diversity, to include some new diversity requirements in the application, including joining the Diversity Coalition of Tompkins County, setting goals, reporting results, and reporting demographics. So that'll go to council next month. And then the other big thing that you may have heard of is McGuire has finally submitted their application for development of the Carpenter Business Park. They're setting up, or they're proposing, a Ford Lincoln Nissan dealership. If you recall, we set up this thing called a TMPUD, basically asserted control over the waterfront for 18 months. And so for this period of time, anyone who wants to develop in that area has to go through council. And so they've submitted their application. There will be a public hearing on Wednesday, August 31st at 6 p.m. Council chambers, where the team will present their project, followed by a public hearing at the next Planning and Economic Development Committee meeting on September 14th, also at 6 p.m. in council chambers. So, you know, I encourage people to come out to both of those. On a personal note, if you don't mind me mentioning this, I'm organizing a screening of a documentary called Code: Debugging the Gender Gap, Tuesday, August 30th at Cinemopolis, 6:30 p.m. It's about gender disparity in my field, computer science, field that I love and want more inclusion in. So this documentary addresses the causes of this disparity and offers some solutions. And it'll be followed by a panel discussion with a few local women entrepreneurs, one of whom is a constituent of mine, Elisa Millerout, founder of Singlebrook. So I expect this to be an interesting discussion. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. We have a couple of questions, if you could stay for us. We have Carol first, then Martha.
Well, it's not so much a question as Duxton's been really in the news lately. Anybody who hasn't seen the, was it op-ed in the Ithaca Voice of Duxton's story about his parents and his family coming here and his road that actually you ended up then taking to come to end up where you are, I encourage you to go on the Ithaca Voice and look for it. What do they look for, Duxton? When I searched the first time, I didn't find it, and I had to wait till somebody sent around a link.
If you search for refugees, so Ithaca Voice has been doing a series on refugees, and they asked me to write something in that series in response to the city council passing a resolution supporting us as a haven for refugees. So, yeah, go to Ithaca Voice and search for refugees. It's also all over Facebook.
Martha Robertson.
Thanks, Mike. Duck, the McGuire development, I can't remember what would happen if it goes through over by the waterfront. What would happen to the existing facilities that they have? They have some downtown, they have northeast.
They intend to keep everything that they have and kind of rearrange. I don't remember the specifics, but Ford, Lincoln, Nissan moves to Carpenter Business Park, and then that allows the other dealerships to expand. They're also adding Fiat to their existing Chrysler location. So they're asserting that they have a severe need to increase capacity.
Thank you.
Anna Cullis?
I guess a follow-up question. Can you describe a little bit what it would cover, what land it would cover, and what alternative uses possibly are being considered for that, and how it fits with the current zoning? I know that there's a change right now. The reason for the IMPUD is that the new zoning that's planning to go in, it wouldn't fit with. Is that
right? So the area in question is along 3rd Street to the west of Route 13 near the farmers market and the community gardens and the wastewater treatment plant, and stretches over to where there's some office buildings with another software company and some other and a equipment rental company. It's currently zoned industrial, upon which they would be, I think a car dealership would fit the requirements of an industrial zone. And thanks for bringing this up, by the way. So the comprehensive plan released last year kind of reimagines that area as more of a mixed-use, possibly light industry area, or sorry, enterprise area. And so the reason why we instituted this temporary mandatory plan unit development is to give the city time, city staff time, to rezone it to more of a mixed-use zone. So alternative uses would be mixed-use housing, retail, and potentially business. But the comprehensive plan kind of emphasizes that pedestrian, cycling, and public transit are favored over individual car ownership. And so there's a lot of pieces of it that kind of contradict what they're proposing. Any objection we have to their plan, however, has to be rooted in the comprehensive plan.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Who wants to go next, Caroline or Dryden? Caroline? You could speak from there.
Okay.
This is Irene Weiser,
Hi, everyone.
Councilman from the town of Caroline.
Yeah, hi, everyone. So I'm here actually going to switch hats because I also am a co-chair of TCOG. So I'll first deliver some very exciting good news from the town of Caroline. We recently put out an RFP for bids on broadband service, and we actually got something that looks like it's going to work.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah. we got two responses. We haven't made a selection yet, so I don't want to, you know, get too far out of limb, but one of them looks very promising. It's a name that probably many of you would recognize, and it's for fiber solution. So we're pretty excited. Once we evaluate things and figure out the details, we'll then, of course, have to look for ways to fund it. But we understand that the state is going to have another round in their broadband initiative, so that may be one avenue, or we may have some other avenues directly with some of our state legislators. So super, super excited. So yay. The other news, changing hats to my co-chair hat from TCOG. A couple of things that I wanted to report, and I'm sorry, this is probably one of the first meetings that I've been to where I don't see Ed Marks or somebody from planning here, but I wanted to thank Ed and let you all know that we're starting to have an every other TCOG month when there's not the Health Insurance Consortium. We're meeting after TCOG with the planning department to talk about municipal initiatives in regards to moving forward on various renewability and sustainability issues. So that's really great, and I wanted to thank Ed and for helping us with that. The other piece, and in a way this relates back to Caroline, is, as you'll recall, earlier this year we announced that our ambulance service, our volunteer ambulance service, was closing its doors after 57 years because there aren't volunteers. And this was kind of, you know, a stunning wake-up call as to the circumstances for a lot of our emergency medical services and fire services, truly, too, around the country. So TCOG just this past month authorized the formation of an emergency medical services task force, currently in the process of finding members to participate on that task force. I welcome any suggestions that people may have to bring. And meanwhile, and I don't know if this has been brought before this body or not, but we did request in that resolution that there be support from the county. And I know already both Lee Shurtleff and Brian Wilbur have been tremendously helpful. Jonathan, we may at times call on you for some legal support. Joe, I know you've offered to be accessible, and possibly Paula as well, if we need to look for any funding to support the effort. But I wanted you to know that it's going forward, and again, I really appreciate the kind of support that the county has offered, and it's going to be a heavy lift. It's a year long right now, twice a month meeting. But I hope we can start some out of the box thinking and figure out some solutions that'll work for all of our residents going forward.
Thank you, Irene. Any questions? Great. And thanks for the sort of dual report tonight. Deborah Cipolla Dennis, councilperson from Town of Dryden.
Hi there. So I just have a few announcements from Dryden. We're starting the budget development process. We'll have our preliminary budget ready by September 23rd. On September 8th, we will be holding it's our regular public session, but in that session, we will be having all of our department heads do a presentation on what their departments do and presenting their proposed budget at that time to the board as well as to the public. We're really encouraging the public to attend that and encouraging feedback as well. And then we'll have two budget meetings on September 20th and 21st to complete the budget. During July, we passed a moratorium on certain public utility installations for 6 months so that we can get our zoning law updated and make sure that we're prepared for the potential special use permit for the West Dryden Pipeline. There are currently many inconsistencies in our zoning law that's related to public utilities, and we need to get that taken care of. The planning board approved with conditions the concept plan for the planned unit development on 1061 Dryden Road in Varna. The major concern there has to do with traffic safety, and their recommendations were to do a more detailed traffic study of that site and to potentially put in some traffic regulations coming out of the site to take care of that. The board will be looking at that in September, probably because it's too close to our August meeting, really, to be prepared. Our rail trail task force has been very busy and has had a lot of success in getting positive responses from landowners along the proposed trail route. And they're prioritizing getting the easements in the Varna area so that those can be included in a Department of Transportation grant that they're putting in to do some of the work on the trail system in that area. Also last month, we passed a resolution pledging $60,000 in cash and in-kind services towards the revitalization of the playground and resurfacing the basketball courts at the Montgomery Park in the village of Dryden. And that work's supposed to happen this fall. And we passed a resolution to support TCAT services and ask our state legislatures to financially support public transportation in Tompkins County. And we're doing a dog enumeration before the end of the year. So that's what's happening in Dryden. And on a personal note, I'd like to just take a moment to recognize the Cornell Police Chief, Kathy Zoner. She's hit a major milestone in her career. She's been on the force at Cornell now for 25 years. She's been the chief since 2009. And as speaking as a Cornell employee and just as a community member, I really appreciate her service and her standard of professionalism, accountability, and the compassion that she personally exhibits and she expects of her staff. She has the kind of sense of humor that helps people relax and uses that sense of humor to help people feel comfortable in tense situations. She works hard to create an atmosphere of less fear and more understanding, which is great for someone in law enforcement. She sets an example for her team where de-escalation is the default action of every situation and the goal is for all parties to go home to their families at the end of the day. I can't list everything that she's done that's really important in her career, otherwise we'd be here all night, but I do want to highlight just a couple of things that were personally important to me. In 2014, Chief Zoner testified before the U.S. Senate and was asked to testify before the U.S. Senate on campus sexual assault and the roles and responsibilities of law enforcement. And she highlighted the Cornell's Council on Sexual Violence Prevention, which she's a big part of, and advocated for the passage of legislation to expand reporting requirements and provide better services for the victims of sexual crimes. Last year, she and her spouse, Kathleen, spoke at the Marriage Equality Celebration event here in Ithaca, and they spoke about the barriers that they face as a same-gender couple, and it set an example for folks there to really hear what they had to say about the challenges that they face having children and living in this world today. And her closing statements were, we've made a lot of progress, but we still have a long way to go. And finally, She showed great leadership in speaking out in support of Black Lives Matter and that the Cornell police strongly oppose police brutality. She often says, "We try very hard not to arrest people just because they're having a bad day." It's a style of leadership that enhances public safety and encourages public trust. So with that, congratulations to Chief Kathy Zoner on reaching this remarkable milestone, and I thank her for her service not only to Cornell but to our whole community. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Questions?
Thank you, Deb.
Thanks.
Just before we go to legislator's privilege, I want to mention after this, I will be moving up some of the items on the agenda so that we, some of the folks here can have them taken care of more quickly. Privilege of the floor for legislators. Glenn Morey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. I just want to remind everybody that Groton Old Home Days will be this weekend, August 19th through the 20th. There's going to be an awful lot of fun for families. The circus starts at noon on Saturday. A wildlife encounter exhibition on Saturday, show times 11, 2, and 4:30. A magic show on Saturday, show times 1 and 5. The annual book sale at the library from Friday noon to 7 and Saturday 10 to 2. The 8th annual Vern Morton Memorial Photography Show and Contest is at the Town Hall on Saturday. The 46th annual art show will be held on the First National Bank of Groton. A treasure hunt is going to be on Saturday for children. And, of course, the parade will be on Saturday starting at 6 o'clock sharp. So please, everyone, come. There's going to be an awful lot of fun for all families and everyone. Thank you.
You're welcome. I expect that we'll, as a group, Compton's County will be in the Groton Parade, and I hope to see many of you there as well. Who else would like to speak? I'm sorry, I have Peter next, then David.
Yeah, I hate to be talking in this direction because I would like to take just a couple of minutes to respond to some of the statements that I've heard the people say.
Peter, you have to use the microphone. You should address the chair.
What? Okay.
You should address the chair.
You want me not to address those people or what?
Well, they can hear you.
Huh?
They can hear you,
okay.
But you should address the chair.
Well, I just want them to understand that I'm trying to respond to what they said. I've gotten the emails. I've read the complaints that people have made. And I must say that I'm sympathetic. Nobody likes to have a right taken away from him or her. If you have a right, even if you don't exercise it very often, it has some value to you. And you don't like to have it taken away. That, however, the fact that you have that right doesn't mean that the result you're looking for is going to depend on you having that right. Let me try to be a little bit more explicit. An example. We have two large police forces in Tompkins County. One is the city of Ithaca, and the other is the county sheriff's office. These two organizations are of comparable size and do essentially the same thing. There's one big difference between them. The Tompkins County sheriff's office, the sheriff is selected by you, and in the city of Ithaca, the person that's the head of the police department is selected by an elected official. So that's really, however, I really want to ask you, do you really think that you believe that somehow the city of Ithaca's police force is more corrupt than the county county sheriff's office because the mayor makes that choice of who that should be? I doubt that thought has ever occurred to any of you. It certainly hasn't occurred to me.
Peter, you're cutting in and out. If you could stay back just about 6 inches from the microphone.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. It seems to me, however, To say that I don't understand the problem that we have in the United States about the police acting wrongly, about times when ordinary citizens are shot at, police not carrying out their duties, that is a real problem. I don't really think it's a problem here, but it may well be. It's certainly a problem all over America. And I think that is the relevant question that you ought to be facing. Either one of these two organizations, the county sheriff or the city police, may in fact be acting wrong at some point or other. And I think you should keep that in mind always, and if you hear any examples, make a big fuss about that. But I honestly don't believe that you have any reason to believe that there's something suspect about the city police force that is not suspect about the county sheriff's office.
David McKenna.
Thank you. I would just like to invite everybody to Newfield this weekend for the 14th annual community garage sales and chicken barbecue. There are several people going to be holding sales, and we'd love to have you come out. Thank you.
Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I want to talk about this issue about the sheriff a little bit. I want to make sure that people understand that in any case, what we would be doing tonight is not making any decisions about the issue. What's even on our agenda is whether to hold a public hearing. So what we'd be asking to do, if we do anything, would be asking the public to come speak. So I want to thank those who've jumped the gun and come and spoken to us from all perspectives. It's what we wanted to do. I started out feeling with the sense that elected was definitely the way to go. When my colleagues, you know, on the Charter Review Committee came and said, let's consider this other way, there were reasons that I started out not there at all and then said, you know what, this is something that we should at least be considering and inviting the public to come. I remembered that while we had Brian Robison here, somebody in the law enforcement world sitting on our body, we had regular, active, good discussions where we remembered and realized how to look at public safety issues from various perspectives, from the perspective of the law enforcement officers, former officers, as well as others that we bring as legislators and that we hear from the public. It's been a real loss. As much as I was happy for him to have taken his new position, it's been a loss to this body. And at the moment, I'm looking for the way to achieve the greatest public voice and democratic process in whatever we do. And right now, it's feeling like we don't have a set process other than once every 4 years, to have the public discussion that the public seems to want to have every few months when you come in here talking to us about many public safety issues, whether it's a jail, whether it's some incident, whether it's arrests, whether it's driving under the influence and what we're seeing. There's many questions people come in with, and we don't have a regular way as a body here. We've got a public safety committee, but we don't have a regular way to have direct input. And the public who tries to come and talk to us about that doesn't have a regular and direct way or process that they can engage in to go and talk to the sheriff regularly about the things they come and talk to us about. We're set up to do that. We're set up to take public input. And the sheriff's department is set up to enforce the law. So whatever comes out of this discussion tonight and as we move forward into the future, I hope that we will find ways, at a minimum, to come out with a greater public forum, or a greater forum for the public to come speak to the sheriff with all the many concerns more frequently than once every few years when you get to weigh in, whether that be maybe, I mean, there's lots of ideas that float around out there that we haven't talked about here at all, even in our discussions about whether to do that, to move forward with this particular measure. We haven't talked about, do we need a citizen review board here? Do we need, should we encourage the sheriff to have regular public meetings, say monthly meetings? Are there other mechanisms? It's not something that we've ever considered. So I hope that people will come and talk to us as we move forward, whether it's in a formal process or not, with ideas like that. We have no power to influence the sheriff in instituting those kinds of things. That would have to be, at this point, a direct conversation with the sheriff, who can choose to take your calls or not. So, I think that the record has been that he does, but, if there ever were to have a sheriff who didn't want to take your calls, there's nothing in the law now that says that he has to, or she. So, as we move forward, that's at a minimum, I hope, is something we'll all consider. Thanks very much for coming.
Anyone else? Mike Sigler, then Dooley Kiefer.
I'll be quick. I mean, I thank everybody for coming. It's nice to see people come out to a meeting and view their grievances. I guess my main question is, what makes us so smart? I mean, I look back. I mean, we're now looking at a jail proposal that's going to cost the county about $500,000 a year. We made a decision not to make that jail bigger, and now we're facing a pretty big bill because of that law and order decision that we made some time ago. So, I don't know. It just seems to me like we're kind of stepping in it saying, oh, well, we know what's best. And frankly, I don't know. I don't know if that's what's best. I think the person that ran for sheriff last time, people thought that he was the best guy going. I mean, that was a close race last time we had race for sheriff. Some people in the room, obviously, some people in the county didn't agree with that decision. But in the end, that was what ended up happening. So, obviously I support keeping this an elected position. I heard one of the arguments that said, this would help Republicans. And, yeah, it might. I mean, maybe you would get a Republican sheriff if it was appointed. I don't know. But then my question becomes, well, okay, if that Republican is so good that the 14 of us would say, yeah, this is the guy, maybe that's what the voters should start looking at and saying, hey, maybe we should pick, the best guy for this job or the best woman for this job. And not, maybe this is a position that transcends party. I mean, it's not, there are people that have run for certain offices. Aurora, I think she ran on both lines for decades, if I'm not mistaken. Why? Because she was awesome. So maybe that's what we should, maybe we need a better, not a better quality of candidate, but maybe we should look at what the candidates have to offer. I mean, frankly, maybe we as voters need to pay better attention to who's running for office and encourage people to run for office, as opposed to saying, well, we're going to throw in the towel on that and we're going to go this other direction. So, and I've already mentioned that we already used different examples for how we appoint different things and why the mayor, he can appoint a chief of police. In my mind, he's an executive. He's an elected executive. And that's part of the executive branch. And I do not see, I haven't been told yet there's a legislature in the state that actually appoints their sheriff. I mean, I've heard that there are elected county executives who appoint their sheriff. But for a legislature to do that, I think, is a pretty big departure. So I'm not saying we're not allowed to do it. I'm just not particularly sure we should do that. So thanks.
Julie Kiefer.
Well, I'm sure that applause wasn't because my name was mentioned. So I'm going to talk about a couple of losses that I'm experiencing locally. Requiem is too strong a word, but the county lost a really good Cornell faculty person when Lynn Irwin passed away this month. He ran the Cornell Local Roads Program, and so many local municipal officials are very familiar with him and his incredible amount of knowledge. I think the time most recently when he helped the county was when we were worried about the possibility of fracking trucks needing to pass through our county and the damage that might be done to our roads. And he was extremely helpful in helping us craft the right kinds of tests for how to go about protecting our roads. He was an amazing gentleman, very approachable. He had other interests than roads, but that's what we all know him for, and it's a big loss to Cornell and to all of us. The other loss I'm feeling is not for humans, but for trees. And here I'm going to talk about an old apartment complex in the village of Lansing. It's called Chateau Claire. It was built decades ago by Stan Goldberg, who, among other things, had Bishop's Hardware. And he built on Cinema Drive in the village of Lansing a small mall and this nice apartment complex. What set this complex apart from essentially all the others that exist and that are being built now is that it had trees and green space. It consisted of two parallel roads with two-story units, different size apartments, and between these two parallel roads was a huge green space with trees. And that green space was used by kids to play on, by families to play with their dogs on. The ambiance there was very different, and it had many mature willow trees, not unlike Stewart Park when it had most of its willow trees. And the willow trees weren't just in the green space. They were also along the sides where the actual apartment units are, and they provide shade. Well, the new developers let the residents know that they had bought the place last week. They were going to make many improvements. They were going to trim the trees, and they were going to build garages that would be for rent. Then, within a couple of days, every willow tree had an orange X on it, and yesterday they started cutting the trees. That's not trimming them. They were just taking them all down. They'll have to take them down in order to be able to build garages. But they did this because that's how you improve things. That's how you make more money. There was no thought to the fact that trees serve many purposes. They don't just give us shade, but they also help protect the soil, help hold the soil in place. They help deal with greenhouse gas emissions. So the loss of trees is something we should take seriously, and I'm very disappointed to see what's happening with this apartment complex. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anna Kellis.
There's a few things. One, an event that happened this last weekend, and I want to thank I think 325 women who swam across Cayuga Lake. It's an event that I participate in every year. It is one of the most powerful experiences every year. Last year, when I swam it, the fundraiser is for Hospicare, for anyone who knows it. And last year I had three very, very close friends who were in Hospicare the day I swam, and one of them died the day of the event. So it was a very emotional experience, a very powerful experience, and they're women who care very much, and all of the money goes to people who want to die with grace, transition from this world with grace, and can't afford it. So their care is offered whether you can pay for it or not. And we raised over $400,000. And so I just want to thank all the women that did that, all the men and women, boaters who supported the administration of that event. If anybody ever wants to come celebrate with us, they don't have to swim across, but you can come cheer everybody on, and that starts at 8 o'clock in the morning because we get in the water starting at 6.
which I don't recommend if you don't have to. Also on Wednesday, there's a celebration for the Freed Clinic. It was mentioned earlier and celebrated. It's a 10-year anniversary, and it's open to the public, and that's at 521 West Seneca Street, 5:30 to 7:30, free fire oven, wood oven pizzas, and cheer, good cheer. So to support them and the work that they're doing, I highly recommend going out. And I also wanted to speak very, very briefly about McGuire. A lot of us here are very, very aware of the shortage of housing and the gentrification that has happened in the city. And a lot of people who love living here can't afford to continue to live here and have had to leave. We've had a loss of affordable housing. And one of the things that we desperately need is housing. And part of the rezoning of the waterfront is in the idea of mixed use is to create a dense area for housing. So what will happen if McGuire does go in there is that we would have a very large paved area for cars rather than humans. So that's just something to think about when you're reading their proposal. You know, we obviously need a diversity of things, but it would take a huge amount of area that could be used for housing. So I would go out on August 31st, and I encourage everybody to go on September 14th to the open session for the planning department in the city. The last thing really quickly that I wanted to mention, too, I wanted to thank everybody who came out tonight. I am continually so impressed at how articulate everyone is. I don't always feel that way myself, and I know how difficult it is, so I really appreciate it, and this is the democratic process coming out and speaking. Just a few clarifications for me with this resolution. The resolution is to set a public hearing. It's not for us to determine one way or another. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody is aware that that is the intention. And the other thing I've been hearing a lot in emails is the belief that it is designed to set a sheriff that reports to the administrator so that it is simply a department. But if you read the resolution, that's not how it was established. It was written that it would report to the legislature, and there are only four positions that report to the legislature, and they sit here in the chambers at every single meeting. And so we have the privilege of hearing from them twice a month. So I personally was very torn because what I heard from everyone I also respect and I agree. It's not something to be taken lightly, and I'm still contemplating, which is why I'm very interested in hearing people's stance on this. I put myself in the position of a voter and thought, what would make me feel the most comfortable having the opportunity to vote once a year and have my voice heard once every 4 years, or having an opportunity twice a month? And that weighed heavy on me in my contemplation, having someone sitting here and having to give a report and having these meetings be recorded and having these meetings be public. So that's just something that I wanted to share, and it's something I'm contemplating, and I'm weighing that in everything that I'm hearing and deeply respecting. So just wanted to share that that is something to add while we're having the public debate and discussion to our, you know, common dialogue. Thank you.
Okay. I had a very brief thing. I just wanted to point out that for the folks at home that the town of Dryden is actually represented by three county legislators, not only Martha Robertson and myself, but also Glenn Morey, who has a part of the town of Dryden as part of his district. I'd like to move now to the jail resolution, and I would ask Peter Stein if you would move Resolution F. I'm sorry. It's Dan Klein's resolution.
I think it's Dan Klein, yeah.
Resolution. Sheriff or the jail?
It's on the agenda from the...
jail, I'm sorry.
No, I was right. It's Resolution F. It should be Peter Stein.
Okay, yes, I'd be pleased to move that resolution, if there's a second.
That's the authorization and to appropriate funds from the contingent fund to study the county's jail population and population trends and to develop design options to accommodate the county's jail population. That's ID 6492. Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion. Dooley Kiefer.
I hope that everyone has in red folders a version with only one change on the second page of it. This is a small change to point out the fact that the study would have first, one, to analyze the population, present and future, and then second, to design options to deal with that, whatever the population turns out to be. And so, Peter, I hope that's the version that you're moving.
Well, I do not consider that friendly.
Okay. I did check it with our county administrator, who found that clarification not unfriendly.
Are you moving it as an amendment?
I will move it as an amendment.
Is there a second on that by Leslie McBean-Claiborne? Discussion on the amendment. Martha Robertson.
I do want to really confirm with Joe whether that's the intention. I mean, whether it's your preference that that go in the resolution. Our intention is certainly, and we talked about this at public safety, is to do these two separate studies with two different kinds of consultants and do them sequentially. But there's an issue about whether that should go in the resolution.
I did talk to Dooley. I think this is okay. It calls out the fact that there will be two studies. Mm-hmm. Dooley and I did talk about, what if the state requires us to do them more concurrently than sequentially. As I look at it, I don't think the language would prohibit that. So I was comfortable with it, and I think that's the version that went through the budget committee just a few minutes ago also.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Jim, on the amendment.
Yes, and let me, I will support it. The budget committee, 15 minutes before this meeting started, passed a 5-0. So, I'm a little bit nonplussed that they're not supporting it, Peter, but I guess you can do what you want to do. But the committee passed the Dooley's resolution at 5-0 vote prior to the meeting. So.
Anyone else want to speak on the amendment? Carol?
So I'm really confused. So, Peter, do you want to reconsider having heard this, whether it's friendly or not?
No, I don't want to reconsider.
Let's just proceed. Let's proceed to a vote on the amendment. Dan Klein.
Can I just hear the changes again? Can I hear what the differences are?
I hope it's in your red folder. It's on page 2 of the resolution, but it does not have line numbers, so I can't help you with that.
First whereas on the second
page. It's the first whereas on the second page, where it is the county's in the county's interest.
So it's just that one change on that
first
whereas.
The first one to analyze.
Thank you.
Okay, ready to vote? All in favor?
No, wait, no.
Yes, Carol.
Oh, wait. To get to something that would be more acceptable to everybody, would it be friendlier to just change that whereas to say instead of the first one and the second, to just take out the word second? So two analyses, one to analyze the present and projected future jail population, blah, 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 and one to analyze cost-effective options.
I don't know. We have an amendment on the floor.
Would that be friendly to you, Dooley, for me to amend your change? It came out of committee.
It moves in the opposite direction, Carol, so that doesn't make sense.
All right, on Dooley's amendment, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. So now we're voting on the resolution F. Or we're discussing Resolution F with the proposed amendment accepted. Go ahead.
Just for the public's information, this is about appropriating funds and getting this started as sort of ASAP to analyze the jail population, and that's separate from a planning, jail architectural study. something that's completely different. So this, the bulk of the funds would be for a firm that would have the capacity to look at our alternatives to incarceration programs, our proposals for reentry, the demographics in the county, the level of probation staffing, a variety of issues that, and any others I think that they would, that such experts would deem, you know, relevant to our population, so that we can, like, have an expert opinion analysis that says this is, down the line, this is what we expect Tompkins County's jail population to look like. We have been doing a tremendous amount with alternatives. We have been able to keep, with our drug courts and other programs, we've been able to keep our jail population very stable for 20 years, even though the population of the county has grown. And even though 20 years ago, so-called experts of jail population said that, oh, my goodness, by the year 2005, you're going to have 150 inmates in your custody. Well, we don't. We have in the neighborhood of 90. So I think from that measure, it has absolutely been a success. And Mike, we've saved millions and millions of dollars and improved people's lives. We've enabled people to avoid the damage of incarceration because, you know, I think it's pretty well accepted. And Captain Bunce, with nothing personal, but no, like incarceration generally doesn't really help anybody. It may have an effect on public safety, but it's not like not generally rehabilitation. So we have long fought for to make sure we had the resources for the best kinds of programming. We are looking, I think this study will help us really double down and figure out what else should we do, what else is going to be recommended so that we can deal with our overcrowding. The Commission on Corrections has said our jail is too crowded. There are two ways to change overcrowding. You can build more cells or you can reduce the population for many, many reasons. Our policy in this county has been to try to reduce the population in a safe manner. So that's what this study is for.
Anyone else? I think Anna, then Jim.
Two things that I wanted to say, very much in support of the idea of doing the two studies and starting with the study that evaluates possible plans for alternatives to incarceration. And Joe, I really appreciate the work that you put in and your team put into outlining that first. And I wanted to second what Martha said, specifically that statistically speaking, jail time does often more harm than good. It isolates people from their families. They lose their jobs. Having not access to their support systems. There are a number of reasons why, you know, it doesn't necessarily make them better members or capable of being better members of the community after they leave. So the emphasis on alternatives to incarceration programs, I think, is extremely important, and I appreciate that. The other thing about throwing up a building, one, obviously, the cost, but there's the other component. Right now, we have the pressure to reduce because we're at capacity. And so it really galvanizes the effort. But oftentimes, and again, in my own research, it appears, and this phrase, I think, applies, you build it and they come. You build a bigger jail, eventually you'll fill it. You'll need another jail, you fill it. You need another jail, you fill it. There's something powerful about saying we are at the capacity that we feel comfortable with and we are going to put our emphasis on reduction. And so I appreciate that is where this effort is. And anyone in the community that wants to help us explore that, bring research together, I know that's what the team is, continue to come to these meetings. So thank you, and I'm certainly in support of it.
Jim Dennis.
Let me try to be as concise as possible. It's not clear to me that this whole issue has been made it out to the public very well. We've had meetings. There's been no media there. What we're looking to do with this resolution is this. We have a jail that currently has a capacity of 82 beds. The Commission on Corrections gives us a variance. It allows us to go to 100. But we're never at 100 because there's classifications of inmates when they get arrested or sentenced to the jail. So we're rarely at 100 people. But what has happened is the commission has said to us on September 1st, you're going to lose that 18 beds that you currently are allowed to do. What this will do, hopefully, we have an entourage going to Albany at the end of the month to deal with the Commission on Corrections, and they will, it's hat in hand. It will be a resolution that, if it passes, it will say that we're going to do an $85,000 study, $60,000 devoted to one portion of figuring out what kind of inmates we have, and then looking at an old study that we have done in 2004 on the size of the jail. We'll be reviewing that and moving forward. Essentially, it is a placeholder. It is an ability, hopefully, that we can maintain these variances for a short period of time moving forward. If, in fact, we are not able to do that, when we start boarding out people, we can look at numbers up to $500,000 a year if the numbers increase of people assigned to the jail. So that's what this resolution is about, and hopefully our entourage will be able to convince the Commission of Corrections with the passage of this resolution that the county is looking at what they need to do to solve the problem of overcrowding.
Carol Chocton, I would like to get to the vote.
So I've been uncomfortable adding my voice to a call for a study. The first study to me has always been one we ought to be doing and makes a lot of sense to me, and I've been a little uncomfortable with the way we've talked about defining the second study. So I wasn't sure how to respond to this, because I think once you start assuming that we're going to expand, that is what we'll end up doing. Thank you to Dooley for pointing out the wording in that whereas, because I realized as I looked at that and then looked at the resolved, I'm not as uncomfortable with the wording in the resolved as I am in that whereas. The resolved says that we're going to do the first study, and then we're also going to develop cost-effective design concepts that accommodate such projected populations. But the whereas says is we're going to analyze cost-effective options to expand the capacity of the jail. And so I'd be much more comfortable with a change in that whereas wording that either just matches the resolved, or I was playing with to analyze cost-effective options to change the capacity and conditions of the jail to a level that will better accommodate the projected population. Maybe we're going to do the first study and find that our population is going to go down. And maybe we're going to find that not only can we go, you know, can we reduce the beds, but we can make better program space. It is overcrowded, and it is an awful place to house people and expect them to be rehabilitated. So I would, Joe, would it meet your needs if we just either change that wording to change the capacity of the jail to a level that will accommodate the projected population, or to change it to match the wording that is in the resolved? Just take out the word expand.
I hate to interrupt, but I would suggest a change in the resolution. Make a motion.
Well, what are we trying to do? Are you asking if that kind of change would be friendly to the mover and the seconder?
Yeah, so which one will be more friendly to the budget, the way it came out of budget committee? Would either one of those be friendly to you, Jim?
We are not voting on the resolution that came out of the budget committee. We're voting on the resolution that came out of public safety.
All right. Okay. Let Carol finish. Carol, are you proposing that we do something?
Well, I wanted to know from Joe which changed wording he'd prefer of those two, if any.
I wrote this version, so I'm pretty comfortable with the way it currently reads.
Yeah, okay. Well, since you wrote this version, I will use the words you wrote, and so I will propose to change that wording in the, one, two, the third, whereas from the bottom, to match the wording that Joe did at in the resolve. So I would change it to analyze cost-effective options to...
That will accommodate...
That will accommodate such projected populations.
Is there that's being moved. Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Discussion on the amendment. Martha Robertson.
Is it friendly to Peter?
Well, it's been moved and seconded. Let's move on. This resolution isn't for us. It's for somebody else. So that's kind of why I asked Joe before about the language, and it's... We know who we're going to hire, and we're going to work with them and all that. In the immediate issue right now is, will this convince the Commission of Corrections of what we want them to do? So if you take out that language, what do you think? Do you think there's any meaningful...
I think it's just removing one word, expand, and replacing it with language that's elsewhere. I don't think that would affect their reading. They want to see that we are serious. I mean, they view the situation right now as we have an overcrowded jail, and they would like to see a serious response to that, either in terms of reducing our populations in a timely way, or accommodating it with additional space. Again, we've looked at board outs, and they've said board outs, are near term but not long term. So I think as long as we read this and it conveys to all of us a seriousness of purpose that we're not just buying time, we're going to move forward and we're going to undertake some very serious studies and we're going to act on that policy-wise. I think as long as that's conveyed in this resolution, we'll be fine. I don't think that Carol's suggestion on a language change here will compromise that. I think we're okay.
Well, that's my concern because, I don't assume that any of this assumes we're going to expand the jail. That's not the basis on which I support this. But I just want to know how it will be read. So I just want to point out...
Yeah, I think he answered your question, didn't he?
Yeah. No, and I'll support the change, but I just want to point out that there was a time when the commission was encouraging counties, this commission was encouraging counties to overbuild their jails because that would help them make money by boarding prisoners in. That was the business model that this state commission recommended, and a number of counties did that, and frankly, a number of counties have since then been left holding the bag because they overbuilt and didn't have the business.
On the amendment, it's Anna.
Yeah, I just want to say I don't want to belabor this discussion anymore.
Thank you.
All I wanted to say was, Joe, since you said it really wouldn't change the essence of it, what is more important to me is that we have a unanimous support for this. And if that's what it takes for you, Carol, that's why I seconded it. I'm fine if it doesn't change the content. I just want unanimous support. I think that would send the right message.
All right, so. Ready to vote on Carol's amendment. Those in favor, please raise your hand. Are those opposed? We have 1, 2, 3, 4 opposed, so that passes.
We have 5 opposed.
Was there 5? I'm sorry. Those opposed again? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So it's 9-5 that passes. Now on the back on the resolution as amended twice, once by Dooley and once by Carroll. We go next back to Leslin.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to call the question.
Been called. Is there a second to call the question? Seconded by Anna. Not debatable. Those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Those opposed?
I just don't believe in doing it.
Two opposed, so we have 12 to 2. So the question is called. We will move to a vote on the resolution as amended twice.
Mr. Chair, could I just ask that the whereas that's been amended be read in whole?
Can you help us, Kathy?
Both the changes are in that one whereas.
Kathy will help us. Just give us a second.
Whereas it is in the county's interest to undertake two analyses, the first one to analyze its present and projected future jail population levels, incorporating current and pending measures intended to further reduce the jail population, and the second to analyze cost-effective options that will accommodate such projected populations.
Thank you.
Okay. This takes a short-form roll call because it is an expenditure out of contingency.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded as no? Appears to be unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we'll go to the next one that's going to be fun. We'll go to Resolution G out of Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Resolution G, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law of 2016, a local law changing the position of sheriff from an elected position to an appointed position.
Is there a second? Seconded by Will Burbank. Let's get to discussion. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things. Some people have said this already, but I just want to feel like it can't be said quite enough. What we're voting on is whether or not to set a public hearing. After the public hearing, after we hear from the public again, next time if we set this public hearing, we will then be voting on whether to not enact this law, but whether or not to let the residents of Tompkins County vote on whether they want to keep an elected sheriff or change it to appointed. So when people are saying that we're denying their vote, no. It will be the residents of Tompkins County who are deciding whether they want to keep the vote or change systems. I just want that to be really clear. Another thing I would like to mention is there was a lot of discussion from the public about we must not like the sheriff, we must be targeting the sheriff. So to be really clear, Sheriff Ken Lansing has stated publicly he is not running for office again. So this has nothing to do with Sheriff Ken Lansing. And that's one of the reasons that I think that this is a good time to do this, because this is not about a person. We're not kicking anybody out of office. We're not keeping anybody out of office. We are discussing the office itself, not a person. There are a lot of talk about votes and giving up votes, the right to vote, and I understand that. I just want to mention that there are lots of offices that are voted on in some places but not in others. So some municipalities have elected bookkeepers, as an example, and as far as I know, nobody in Tompkins County has an elected bookkeeper. That's someone we appoint. So another one would be coroner, right? In some states, they elect their coroner for each county. We don't do that here. So is it better to have an elected coroner than an appointed coroner? I don't know. I'm not really in a position to say, but I don't... My point is that there are lots of positions that are not elected, and it's not like people's rights are being denied in those locations. Similarly, I want to mention that in New York State, there are 460 law enforcement agencies that have an appointed head. There are only 54 that have an elected head. So having an elected head of police is the exception rather than the rule. Similar statistic, 55%, more than half of New York State residents live in a place that has an appointed head of police, not an elected head. So what we're doing here is asking to make a change, or asking if the public wants to make a change. What we're not doing here is inventing something or suggesting something that is, you know, outrageous or nobody else is doing. So those are some of the points that I wanted to make.
Dan, did you want to speak to the fact that the resolution that came out of charter last time, the one you've brought forth, is different than the one that came out of charter last time?
Sure. So, there's been some confusion about this, too. This resolution says that we are going to change the sheriff's position from elected to appointed, and that that position would report to the 14 elected members of the legislature. There was an earlier, a different version that had us splitting the duties of the sheriff, and that is not this. This one is changing it completely from elected to appointed.
Okay, discussion. Last one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan, thank you for that explanation. I want to reiterate just something here because this is one that's a little tricky for me as well. So this setting the public hearing is to give the public the opportunity to say to us whether we should bring to referendum that the public will vote on a decision to change the sheriff's position from elected to appointed. So the public hearing is to allow for that to happen, to set the referendum, to what I'm reading the resolution, I'm a little confused, that's what I'm asking. I read the whereas, it says whereas such a change in the charter required a local law to be submitted to mandatory referendum. So is the public hearing to allow us to move forward with that? Is that what that is?
That's right. We would set a public hearing. The public hearing would be about the specific law that changes it from elected to appointed. After the public hearing, we would then vote whether we want it to go to the public or not.
And going to the public means setting that mandatory referendum. So we are not making that decision, just the 14 of us, that yes, we're going to make that change. We're making a decision to allow the public to vote on whether that change should happen or not.
That's correct. We cannot make that decision.
Right.
It has to be the public.
Thank you.
Carol?
So a question for Dan. As this came out of committee, as we discussed it in committee, is my understanding correct that the wording in the law that follows the resolution, that's only the wording that would be changed in the charter, that all the rest of that section in the charter that lists the duties of the office would stay as they are?
That's correct.
Okay. So I want people to understand that. I have really mixed feelings at this point about how to proceed, whether to do this or whether we need more community discussion before doing this. Here's why. The charter review, well, here's why. In one sentence, neither we nor the public seem to focus on the questions, the big questions we need to answer, until we have an actual resolution in front of us, you know, or a hearing, an official time to weigh in on something. So setting the hearing would create a process to do that. Because we obviously are hearing from people more in one direction than another, at this point it doesn't feel like the full information is out there, that we've considered all the angles necessarily, that we, what it is we'd be bringing to the public hearing, we may need to get more input first to see exactly what flavor of change we might want to bring to public hearing. You know, the Charter Review Committee had announced several times to both us and the public, because the public listens to our meetings, that they were looking at this, and nobody weighed in. And they announced that this is the date on which we're going to be talking about this, and none of the rest of us came. So if we as legislators didn't focus in on the question, until it actually came to us in writing. You know, I don't know that we can expect the public to do that either. So that would be an argument for proceeding to pass this tonight, and then the argument for just giving it some more time and thought, letting people weigh in, having some information sessions, whatever it is that we do, writing to our neighborhood listservs. There's an argument for doing that. So if my colleagues have anything to help me with that decision, I'm all ears.
Next we have Peter Stein.
I certainly support changing the way that we appoint the sheriff, but I will not vote for this resolution at this particular time. I think we have not had enough discussion amongst us about the validity of the concerns that people have, which I think are very strong, and ways that we possibly could do something to respond in some way to those concerns. I think they're very serious concerns.
Rich John.
Thank you to everybody who came in and spoke. It's useful to get your input, and certainly there was an impression of pretty strong feelings on this issue. I've looked at this idea of appointed versus elected at some length now, and frankly, I think there's arguments on either side of this issue. Given the strong feeling on it, I believe we need to take more time to really think about this. I want to mention two things. One is we are undergoing a consolidation study to consider putting some of the police agencies in the county under one roof. And my guess is that if that study comes forward saying this is at all viable, the idea of how you're going to govern that unified police agency, this is an idea that has to be on the table. We're a deliberative body. We're supposed to think about ideas like this. The other issue I'd just raise is the tax cap, that New York State is driving the local municipalities very hard to look at any ideas on how to save money, how to be more efficient, how to improve operations. And this question falls into that category as well. Almost certainly, we're going to be looking at governance issues across all of the government operations that the county's responsible for. I certainly read a lot of comments in the paper that immediately jumped to the question of questioning the motives of anybody who would support this issue. And frankly, the comments made tonight were very civil and thoughtful, and that's how I think we have to go about this discussion. So I thank you for the way that you talked about it. So, there.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Mike. I am not going to support this either at this point for many of the reasons that I just heard that Rich stated. My sense is it's an idea whose time has not yet quite come. And even though the county's been talking about it in various forms for many, many years, I think there are many other things that have to go forward before we get to a point of making a move to even put it in front of the public to allow them to make a choice about what they want to do. I think if we're able to sell the idea, then I think the public will support it. If we're not able to sell the idea, then obviously they will not. But I kind of view this like something we have to educate people. We have to tell people the pluses and minuses. And I've never viewed it as taking away someone's chance to vote for something. One of the things that has been said out loud here and in emails is that the county legislature should work for the county legislature. I don't believe that. I believe it's another department in the county. The person would be hired with a search committee headed up by the county administrator, and the county administrator would be the filter
for that person, just like they're the, he's the filter or whoever is there for every department head. We don't hire department heads. Their search committee is done, and that's the way we do it. I view the sheriff's job exactly the same way. You need somebody that can be, that is accountable in terms of money mostly, and clearly the way they conduct themselves in public, and also in private. And we, all of you, you know, have been aware of what we've been through for the last 6 years or so. So I'm not going to vote for this at this time.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. Well, I seconded this motion, and I will be voting for it tonight, but I recognize that probably for the reasons that other people have laid out that it may, in fact, not pass. However, I would encourage everybody on this body and anybody out in who came and speak to us tonight or visiting the chamber or looking at home to really give this some, this issue some thought, because as Rich said, the answers are not quite as simple as it might seem at first blush. I think we all recognize that we want the people who work for us at the county or any governmental level to be competent. We want them to be honest. We want them to truly serve our population. And I think we've been fortunate that that by and large that's the case here in Tompkins County. We have hundreds of really very fine, hardworking employees, and many of them are certainly in law enforcement. The challenge, though, is to have a system in place that when things go wrong, and things do go wrong in every department, that we can have a mechanism where the public can come and speak to us about the problem and maybe change it. And I'm of the belief that currently, as it's set, with an elected sheriff, we don't have that mechanism in place. The 14 of us around the table are representatives. Mikey asked the question, what makes us so smart? Probably nothing. Our job is to represent. Our job is to hear the public, take the phone calls, have the discussions, and then make the best possible decision based on what we know. And as I think Carol pointed out, that's not the job of the sheriff. The sheriff is law enforcement. And I think we need a place where we can have a civil discussion as issues arrive relative to the sheriff's department, and do it maybe in a better way than we have been doing it. And that to me was, I think, what motivated this move to change the way that person is chosen. Now, to make things further confusing, this initially started in the process, sort of the routine, regular process of reviewing our county charter. So the initial proposal came out of that committee, and it was different than the one that is before us tonight. That called for basically dividing the job of sheriff into two. There would be one person who would be elected, and that person would run the county jail and do civil matters, and then the road patrol would be appointed. And then that went to the Government Operations Committee, which basically decided to that there should only be one position, and that position should be accountable to this body, what we call a direct report. Now, within us, as we've had this discussion, there are other alternatives that we discussed, and there are pros and cons to both. Jim pointed out that it might be better, for example, to have that person accountable to our county executive and have it essentially just like another department.
County administrator.
Thank you. Yes. So there are a number of flavors. It's not immediately clear, I think, to me that any one of them is immediately the best. But I am committed to wanting to set up a mechanism that works the best if we can figure it out for the county folks. Dan pointed out that there are functions that in other communities are elected, which we don't do that here. And one of the best ones to think of is our county assessor's office. I think we are the only county in upstate New York that does not elect its county assessor. Most counties, you actually have town assessors that are elected, and their job is to look at the value of houses and set the value, and then that becomes the basis for your real estate taxes. Many, many, many years ago, here in Thomas County, we somehow summoned the courage to make that a professional operation, to have one office. We have fewer people. It's not elected. And from what I've heard from my constituents, people generally feel they're doing a pretty decent job. Whether we will ever get to the point of doing this for the sheriffs, I don't know, but I do hope that we continue to think about it, that we talk about the best way to approach. And I will be voting for this tonight.
Anna, Martha, Mike. Anna?
Two points. One, a component of this version that I appreciated is the fact that the position would be reporting directly to the legislature and 14 elected officials, because to me it's as close as you can get to an elected position and still be something that has oversight and accountability and has the rigorous process of going through a job application. So that was a component that I appreciated. I think that I would support it more than having it be simply a department going from a position where it's completely separate to simply a department to me seems a bit too far. But I understand where everyone's coming from. That's just my particular stance. There were, however, a bunch of comments, not here tonight. I really appreciated the respectful comments here. But I saw many comments in social media, and I saw comments by emails that this, and it was alluded to tonight, that this is a power grab. And particularly that this is a power grab of the administrator, county administrator. And I need to stand up in defense of our county administrator. This did not come from our county administrator. This is not a power grab of our administrator. This came from the charter committee. I think that stance for me, I just want to make that really clear. And I respect that you have left this, as this complicated discussion between legislators. So that was very important to me. And I appreciated where the public was coming from about really wanting us to consider checks and balances and how to really establish that. And I've talked to several people in public safety, and what I hear from them is this is very complicated. It's not a cut and dry answer. What the best solution is needs a lot of discussion. The fact that is what's coming out of some of the people in public safety, to me, is impressive. And the fact that this resolution is exclusively for more discussion is something that I feel that I can support. If we were coming forward and saying we're going to make a decision, which of course would be illegal and unconstitutional, that would be a different discussion. But what I feel, and I do appreciate what Rich said and Jim said, that we're cogitating right now. And the fact that everyone came out today, to me, is evidence that there is something positive about bringing this resolution forward, because we need to have this discussion because of experiences that we've had and complaints that we've had over the last couple of years about the current situation we have. And the resolution is forcing our hand. It's inspiring people to come out, which is exactly what it should do. And the resolution moving forward would continue that conversation. And from that conversation, we get creative ideas. So maybe this might not be what people want. But the fact that we're having a public forum means that all of the brilliant people that came out today would have the opportunity to collectively and democratically come up with a solution that works for everybody. So that's why I'm in support of this, because I want to hear what people have to say. Thank you.
Okay, let me tell you the list. I've got Martha, Mike, Peter, Leslin, Dooley. Martha?
Okay. I agree with everything that's been said, which is to say that, in fact, I have mixed feelings about this decision. But I also feel very strongly that we don't need to set a public hearing to hear from the public, obviously. But setting a public hearing kind of sets things in motion, and I think it's the wrong time. So when after everybody's had their piece, I would support a move to table this. But I think especially the issue of the law enforcement consolidation study, that promises to be a very thoughtful and independent and well-researched report that is going to be new information to us about what would it mean to have consolidated law enforcement in the county. And I just think kind of doing this conversation is the first step, but I think setting a public hearing sets things in motion and kind of sort of prejudges the whole thing. I'd be happy to have everybody come 2 weeks from now when our next meeting, and 2 weeks after that, I think we have a three-week break. Okay. But the point is, people should keep coming, and people should come to Public Safety Committee meetings to talk about this. And where at a committee meeting, we can actually have more dialogue than just, you know, stand at the microphone for 3 minutes. So I think that this is, there are a lot of layers to this decision, and I look forward to the law enforcement consolidation study adding some really important information that none of us has right now.
Mike?
I'm going to reiterate something I said last time. You know, we keep talking about this position as if it's another department head. And it bothers me when everybody says that. Just because this is not a job of an assessor. This is not a coroner's job. I don't know why those jobs are elected. There's got to be something in the history there that makes them that. I mean, the job of sheriff, you are authorizing somebody to arrest people, to kill people if necessary. I mean, this is just not the same thing as any of our department heads. And we keep talking about this as if it's like a singular job, too. And it's not a singular job. This job oversees a whole bunch of deputies who also are authorized to do things that, frankly, they have a lot of power. And if one of them gets out of line, yeah, that sheriff needs to be able to be held to account. And we keep saying, well, we're elected, so people are going to hold us to account if we make a bad choice. I simply don't buy that. And the reason I don't buy that is I look at Congress. I mean, their approval rating's like 8%. Everybody hates Congress. Not my guy. My guy's doing a good job. But, you know, that Congress over there, they're awful. And I see that, and I see us kind of going there and saying, oh, well, we'll be able to hold this person to account or that person to account. I mean, there are things that sheriffs in our past history over the last 50 years, I would say we'd be like, wow, that wasn't so smart. I wouldn't have done that. And yet, somehow people get reelected. Some people, you know, they get by it or they get past it. I don't know. There are people in Congress that I've seen have done things that I can't believe people still vote for them. And yet, there they are. So, I don't know. I just wanted to say that it's just not the same thing as a department head. I mean, you really are, you're putting somebody really into a life or death kind of position. And I think the public needs to be able to weigh in on that more so than, well, I voted for my county legislator, and that covers me. I have a problem with that. The other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, we brought up a lot of numbers earlier. Well, yeah. I mean, the chief of police of New York City is appointed, basically, by the mayor, de Blasio. And, yeah, pretty much half the state lives there. So, yes, more people are covered by an appointed, you know, head of police force than any place else. Well, yeah, because we have a giant city. And I think most major cities probably are run that way. They probably have an appointed, you know, head of the police department. So the numbers are certainly skewed in that direction when it comes to something like that. But I think you said like 55 people are elected. Well, that's probably 55 counties with the sheriff. And that's why they do it, though. I mean, that's historically why we have elected sheriffs. It's this job that is just different than any other job, and it's a powerful job. And, you know, yeah, if the chief of police for Ithaca did something wrong, was taking kickbacks, et cetera, yeah, people would be calling for his or her ouster, and the mayor would have to react to that. But, yeah, they don't put it in the hands of the city council, of the however many people they have now. They keep adding. A lot of people on the city council. I mean, they don't appoint it, right? Well, there's probably a reason, because somebody needs to be held to account. And I just don't think we as a body can function like that for this particular position. So thank you.
Peter Stein.
The reason I'm voting against this at this particular time is that I find there are essentially two problems in it. One is the one that you've heard about that all of these people talked about, and I don't really have anything more to say to that. Other than, I honestly think that what that is all about is a history. We look back on the times, you know, we were all taught in grade school about the glories of the United States of America and the way we are a self-governing organization, that we are a self-governing nation. And we learned to be proud of that as children. And I still maintain some of that, even though it's been a whole lot of years since I was anywhere near a child. But those parts of our structure which emphasize the fact that we are not run by somebody else, but we run ourselves, are precious in some sense. And I honestly believe that that's what the people that are complaining about it are saying, and that we somehow should find some kind of a way to make them feel better about what we're doing, because I believe that we should essentially have an appointed sheriff. But there is something else which I find is a real problem, and I am unconvinced that having this position report to the legislature makes any sense whatsoever. I really think that's a serious error, because I don't think this legislature is in a position to deal with having to tell somebody what they're doing wrong or making suggestions. So we don't have that practice in doing it. I mean, we talk about the self-reports.
Direct reports.
The what?
The direct reports.
The direct reports. And I fill them out all the time, but I'm telling you, I have no way of thinking that I can tell Jonathan exactly what I think he's doing wrong. I mean, we have a bunch of things. We put down, yes, I'll give him an 8 on this score, 6 on that score, and then I pass it in, and I have no idea what's going on. That's not the same thing that the county administrator does when he has his yearly discussions with people and they actually talk back and forth about what they're doing and how they could do it better and so on and so forth. And I think that making it not having that opportunity for the head of the police to have that discussion that all the other department chairs have is a good thing. So that's something I really have some concern about that particular detail. And I would hope that we could think about that a little bit more before we make a final decision.
Leslie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a couple of things for me. One is, I remember when we were having the discussion 2 years ago about restructuring the dormitory in the jail and removing the indoor rec space and putting a dorm in there, that we were diligent enough to allow for much more public conversation, because this was a big deal, including, I think, some special meetings where the public was invited, that we can engage in that level of dialogue. This seems to be on that level or even bigger for me. And so I would hope that our committees will consider, I know, Carol, you mentioned it, you've had committee meetings and all of these things, that we might want to think about engaging this public in much more dialogue before we move forward in whether we want to take this to referendum or not. So I just want to say that. And the second thing is, sitting around this table, I've heard at least two people talk about the complaints we've had over the last couple of years or so. And I want to reemphasize something that Dan said. This is not about complaints about the personnel that we have in the Sheriff's Department right now, the sheriff or anyone else. We have been having complaints about the Sheriff's Department for years. Let's just be honest about it, because some people will like what you do and some people will not like what you do. And you will get complaints. We get complaints about other departments. So please, let's be mindful of our words and not paint a picture that there is something so egregiously wrong with what's going on there that we have to get to this place. So when we say words like a couple of years, there are people who are going to take that literally and think there's something happening that is so wrong there with our current sheriff and our current personnel. So I just want to ask my colleagues to pay attention to those words and know that this is not new. We've heard about it. We've not heard about it. Jim is very right, and year in and year out, people have brought to us, should we have an appointed sheriff or not? Who does the sheriff report to, et cetera? We find ourselves in this real strange position, because when people come to us with complaints, what do? As a legislature, we fund the department. We provide, you know, taxpayer dollars fund the department. We provide the monies to run the department and to carry out the services. But the oversight that we have for accountability for the top law enforcement officer is very limited. So that's a place that we really probably should be having a lot more conversation around. How does that happen? How do we make it happen that we can be accountable to the people when they come to us with concerns and complaints? I just want to put that out on the table and encourage much more conversation with our public on this issue.
Julie.
Thank you. We heard a lot of things about the sheriff tonight. I guess I'd like to start by saying there is no sheriff provided for in our Constitution. In fact, state law mentions sheriff in only a couple of ways. There needs to be a sheriff to serve civil process, court orders, and to run a jail. We have a sheriff that does those two things, which the state requires be done, but we also have a sheriff responsible for law enforcement and who runs a road patrol. And yes, it's true that the Charter Committee's initial presentation to this body recommended a split position because we, the majority of us, recognized that people like to vote. They like to have the right to vote. And so voting for the two jobs that state law requires a sheriff to do, which is serve civil process and run a jail, made sense. People could keep their elected sheriff. But we also recognized how different the job of sheriff is in respect to law enforcement these days. Over, I don't know how many decades, law enforcement requirements have expanded greatly. They're more complex, they're more technical. We expect our law enforcement to deal with mental health issues, with poverty issues, with homelessness, with privacy issues, with diversity, with addiction behaviors. And they also have to manage and use and respond to the use of really heavy-duty militaristic armaments. So it's not the old-fashioned sheriff's job that maybe it once was. And it's all those latter things that make me realize that we would be best served by an individual who is not elected because he's on a particular party ballot, or this person is a good guy and we like him, the cut of his jib or something, there's no job description for sheriff. There are no requirements. And so, to me, we would be better serving our residents if we actually had a professional running our equivalent of police, our law enforcement, and our road patrol. So for me, as a charter committee member, I've not only thought about it this year and last year, I've thought about it 10 years ago, I've thought about it many, many years. Having an appointed sheriff makes sense to me. But I understand that we have not gone through a process of informing the public, educating the public what the real issues are. The issues are not simply, should I get to vote for a sheriff or not? The issues are, how can law enforcement best be designed to serve everybody? So I am pretty well resigned to the fact that, although, as Mike Lane has said on previous occasions, the stars are aligned for us to do it this year because we have an incumbent sheriff who is not going to run again. We have a presidential election when there will be a really large voter turnout. And I think it's important to have a large turnout on an occasion when we're talking about changing our charter in this manner. But the time is running short to get something on the ballot for the general election this fall. And I think I am resigned to realizing that we cannot do the necessary public education and outreach to have a successful campaign this fall, although in 3 months' time, I think we could do it. But I don't see my colleagues ready to vote on that and take that chance that we will be ready to educate the public and have them vote in a knowledgeable fashion this fall. So I'm resigned to thinking that we will probably bring this up next year, and we will have to have a special election, and the turnout will not be what it should be unless we do an incredible job of educating our residents about why they should turn out and vote on this. I, like Will, will be voting for this resolution tonight because I think we should set a public hearing. We should begin having this dialogue with members of the public.
I'm going to speak for just a second, and then I've got Martha, and then hopefully we can kind of wind up. We got more hands, okay. I'm going to speak next. Change never happens unless there is a mechanism to make change happen, either because something happens, a calamity, and you have to have change, or because people think about it for a long time and see that there is a better way of doing things. I'm really troubled by the fact that the reaction initially here to this proposal seems to be partisan. I don't think it's a partisan thing we're talking about here at all. I think what we've been talking about since at least 1996 is a better way of doing this, a way that it's done in other parts of the state. And there are different sheriff's agencies around the state. Some are appointed. Some are elected. Some sheriff's agencies don't even have road patrols at all. They allow the state police to do that, the state police, which is headed by appointed officials. I think that the public ought to have a chance to weigh in on this. I personally preferred and voted for the proposal to keep the elected sheriff for the jail and for the civil process, et cetera, but to have a police commissioner appointed. I still think that's the better way to go. I realize that there are questions about that that's more expensive. And, Mike, I want to respond to one thing you said, if I may, please, and that you said it's not the same as other department heads. And, of course, every department has there are differences. But the sheriff is not the only one that oversees people that have to have guns. And if we have a probation department where the probation officers are required to have firearms training, frankly, they aren't out there writing traffic tickets or things like that, but they are dealing with the criminal justice system. So that's they're overseen by an appointed official. So that's why I supported the change, and that's why I was quoted in the paper saying, and I think it's true, it was time this matter came to a head to have this discussion, and I certainly agree wholeheartedly with the comments Anna made that it's so important that we raise this for people to think about. Lots of changes going on out there. We can't afford everything anymore, and we have to think about what we do and how we go about it. Martha?
Well, I was going to move to that we table this, but that would cut off debate, and I've since seen two more hands, even though people have already spoken
I'll
than
once. I'll come back to you if you want to move to table, if you let the other folks speak. Carol?
Yeah, I'll be brief. Most of what I spoke about was at the public privilege for legislators. I was going to, in addition to what I talked about then about the greater feedback loop that I think this would provide, and the reasons I voted for this in committee included a lot of what Dooley just laid out in terms of the items that are needed, professionalism on both the law enforcement and administrative sides. I just want to correct, so I won't go into that in depth. I just want to correct one thing that's been talked about a little bit here is what's been called the consolidation study. And I think what we said we would go ahead with is a shared services study.
Yes.
And I just want to correct the record that we are not only studying consolidation as a city representative from a district in the city. There are a whole host of additional issues that need to be considered in connection with that. And so these are not related decisions. They're related. They have some relationship, but they're different discussions. And the other, if we don't proceed to do this tonight, let's not just wait until the next time somebody brings it up for a vote, let's engage in some process, Mike. There must be experts out there who could present to us in a more dispassionate way the pros and cons, what the experiences have been around the country, whether, and not just in a committee meeting, that we do it here for the legislature, and maybe we do it in a longer session that we could do that everybody from the public would be invited to, that would be publicized. I think that would be a good way to go rather than just sit on it till the next time somebody raises it.
Okay, are we ready to vote?
I have a few last comments.
You have another comment, Anna?
Just a few last comments in response to some of the things that have been said. One comment was that the legislature is not qualified to have oversight over this position as a direct report. And then I would ask, if that is the rationale, we would say the same for Rick. And therefore, Rick should not be a direct appoint. I would say the same for Joe, and I would say the same for most of us, although there are some lawyers here. So I can't really say that necessarily for Jonathan, but I'm not sure that that is a very good argument for not having it be a direct report. My experience of the four direct reports is that we have a very collegial relationship and that you more often provide information and help us with our governing, the community. So I want to repeat that comment that was made by Deb, I think, during the privilege of the floor. I very much appreciated that. I just don't think that is a valid argument. I also wanted to make the point, saying that negating the point that was made about the appointed positions that exist in New York State by saying, yeah, that's New York City, therefore it doesn't hold any weight, negates half the people in the state. I think that that point would only work if somehow fundamentally humans in New York City are different and governing and providing public safety was different than other people in other parts of the state. So I just want to point out that I don't think that we can negate that. There is a lot of precedent. So I think that we have to weigh all this, and I think that it's a very complicated issue. And the last thing that I want to say is that this is just, it's a question of what would be the best form of accountability. And there's arguments on both sides. There really are. So I'm just for hearing them and discussing them. And there are pros and cons, so let's hear them.
Mike, could you make it short?
Yeah, I'm not negating the people in New York City. I'm saying that they have a representative that they can vote against. If it's a direct line, boom, you don't like what's going on with the police force, you fire the mayor. That's your direct line. You don't have to go to the city council and say, well, which person's responsible?
The city council approves what the mayor in the city of Ithaca.
Okay, let's just let Mike make a comment.
I mean, I'm talking about New York City, but that's fine.
Martha, I said I'd come back to you.
I would like to move to table this resolution.
Is there a second to table? Jim Dennis. That's not discussable. Let me just explain what will happen if this matter is tabled. It will be laid on the table. It can be brought up again in the future. However, if we don't act on it tonight, there will not be a time to schedule a public hearing and have a vote on a local law in time to be able to have it then go forward to a public referendum in November of 2016. So a vote to table will mean there will be no referendum this year.
Point of information, Mike.
Yes.
Does parliamentary procedure advantage, though, does it depend on how you vote on that tabling motion in terms of your ability to bring it back?
I don't believe so.
No.
Okay.
I think anyone can do that if there's a second.
Thank you.
All right, we have a motion to table this. All those in favor of tabling, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Those opposed. One, two, three, four, five. Who did I miss? Let's see the pros or those in favor of tabling again, please. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Okay, now we've got nine. The motion to table passes 9-5. All right. We're going to take 10 minutes, and then we're going to come back and proceed down the rest of the agenda.
I'm just, yeah, I'm just saying it's done, but not just now.
Okay, we're back in session. I've had a request to take one of the items off the consent agenda, which we expect would be pulled. And Dan Klein, I wondered if you would please move Resolution E.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to. I'd like to move Resolution E, approving revisions to Policy 11-46, exclusion screening and updating the county compliance program and the Tompkins County Government Administrative Policy Manual.
Is there a second? Seconded by Carol. Discussion, Peter?
No discussion.
Oh,
I'm seconding it.
Dooley?
I would have pulled it off, so since it's been moved separately, I have some proposed changes to the wording of it. Among other things, I think it's important to refer to individuals as who and not that. And I went through these changes with Paula Younger, who's our compliance guru, and she found them acceptable. So I'd like to offer these changes. There's a copy in your red folders. And I'll move it.
Wait, I'm sorry. Can I
Are they friendly? Question? Can I ask that?
Yes.
Well, can I ask a question? Are your changes, do you have any changes to the policy itself or to the resolution?
No, just the resolution. The policy already reflects that people are who's and not yet.
Carol, are those changes friendly?
Can I ask Paula? So I worked closely with Paula at the committee level on changes to the policy. Is this friendly to you? Okay, then it's friendly to me.
All right, so those are friendly amendments. Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution as submitted by Legislator Kiefer, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, let's go back up to Chair's report and Chair's appointments. I have no appointments tonight except, well, I guess I do have appointments. I am appointing the Jail Study Special Committee. And I'm going to take just a minute. I'm going to read the narrative on this. I think it's important. And we've talked earlier about our efforts to try to save the variances and how we'll be proceeding on that. We voted earlier on a resolution to fund some studies for that. But the other piece of this, in my view, should be to have a special committee of our legislature. As the population of Tompkins County continues to grow, Tompkins County has been unable to house in its existing jail all of the prisoners committed to it by the judicial system. For many years, the New York State Commission of Correction, the COC, has granted variances from its regulations that have permitted the double bunking of 18 additional prisoners in cells that do not meet floor space requirements for two prisoners. Even with the variances, because of overcrowding in the jail, the county must also pay the expensive costs of transporting and boarding out some prisoners to jails in other counties. Often those boarded out prisoners are women. Boarded out prisoners are denied equal access to their families and to assistance programs provided in Tompkins County. For more than a decade, Tompkins County has made serious financial commitment to programs to reduce the number of prisoners in the jail. It has aggressively attacked some of the causes of increasing numbers of prisoners and has addressed the difficult problem of recidivism. Some of the county's efforts include funding for opportunities, alternatives, and resources of Tompkins County, that's OAR, which provides prisoner assistance and services. OAR administers a bail fund supported by Tompkins County to bail out prisoners who are financially unable to meet low-level bail amounts for certain low-level crimes. Three drug courts working to give those convicted of substance abuse-related crimes the opportunity to stay out of jail if they comply with their individualized programs designed to fight addictions or other kinds of problems. A day reporting program to give judges a monitored program for convicted defendants short of committing them to jail. The program is housed in a recently completed $1.5 million facility that adjoins the County Human Services Building. A probation department committed to providing alternative and assorted kinds of supervision to keep defendants out of jail. Assigned counsel to defend those charged with crimes, and a defense counsel at first arraignment program that provides lawyers in court from the very time of arrest. The program has already resulted in more appearance tickets being issued at police discretion and fewer arraignments leading to incarceration than previously. The legislature has allocated $100,000 to begin a jail reentry program to assist former prisoners find housing, jobs, drug treatment, mental health services, and other counseling programs. The county and the city of Ithaca are investigating a law enforcement-assisted diversion LEAD system similar to those in Albany and San Francisco. The system would allow police officers the discretion to not automatically arrest defendants who commit low-level crimes, such as those that are drug-related, but rather to direct them to professional assistance, such as to find housing, drug treatment, family, and/or mental health counseling. As recently as this year, the legislature authorized the capital expenditure to expand jail capacity by building an outdoor recreation area at the jail and converting the indoor recreation area it replaced into a dormitory with 7 additional beds. Statistics appear to show that although the jail has been operating with variances, double bunking has not proved unsafe for prisoners, and the numbers of prisoners has remained manageable. In late July, county legislators, county administrator, the sheriff, and the jail administrator met with staff members of the COC and explained county efforts to reduce the population through alternative programs, and in particular, the new reentry program. The county representatives came away from the meeting believing that the jail variances would be continued. Contrary to that, however, within 2 weeks, the jail administrator received a letter from the COC stating the variances were being revoked at the beginning of September and that the 18 extra bunks had to be removed from the cells by then. This instantly reduced jail capacity by 18 beds and will require a huge increase in transportation and boarding out expenses to house prisoners in jails out of county. When Tompkins County studied increasing the number of cells at the jail a decade ago, those who were opposed argued that it would be less expensive to board out prisoners than to pay building and debt service costs for the expansion of the jail and to also pay the cost of additional correction officers and others that would be needed to staff it. Although, with the help of the variances, that argument has borne out. At the mentioned meeting with the COC staff, the question was raised as to whether Tompkins County could address the overcrowding by simply boarding out excess prisoners instead of building new capacity. The response was that the COC would not look favorably on boarding out as a long-term solution to the county's overcrowding problem. The county is proceeding to authorize and allocate money for two successive studies. The first will be a socially focused study of the jail population and future projections, taking into account the continuing and future efforts the county will make with its multiple alternatives to incarceration programs. After that, there will be an architectural study of the jail, updating what was done a decade ago, particularly taking into account the results of the first study. To oversee the two studies, to review and recommend to the full legislature about how we should go forward to face overcrowding at the jail, and to bring our facility up to compliance with COC regulations, the county is appointing a special committee to be known as the Jail Study Committee. The committee shall meet as frequently as necessary and shall regularly report its progress at regular meetings of the legislature. The anticipated time frame is for the committee to issue an interim report within 3 months and a final report within 6 months. The special committee shall consist of 5 legislators appointed by the chair, who shall also designate the chair of the committee. From the beginning, it is expected and encouraged that the special committee will invite other critical players to meet and participate with the committee. Examples would be the sheriff, jail administrator, OAR, facilities, probation, and others in the discretion of the special committee. The special committee's task will be to educate itself as to the current condition of the jail and policies, as well as how to meet COC regulations. It shall review the prior jail study report. It shall supervise the 2 new studies and review their reports. It shall investigate costs and recommend on alternative methods to meet overcrowding at the jail, including both programming and building, and the financial implications of those alternatives for county taxpayers. The legislators assigned to the Jail Study Committee are Richard John, who will chair it, Martha Robertson, David McKenna, Anna Kellis, and James Dennis. And I would conclude with this paragraph, and I really mean this. County legislators are well aware that jail issues are sensitive in our community. Members of the legislature may have preconceived views of how to address jail issues, but I'm asking that all members of the special committee put any of that aside and enter into the study with open minds so as to be able to gather and send to their colleagues the best possible information and recommendations. Thank you. And thank you to the members that I've appointed for agreeing to serve on this thankless committee. Move forward. Any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Let's go to the consent agenda. I don't have any committee appointments, so I'll read them. Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution A. Budget adjustment, 2016 state allocations, Youth Services Department, ID 6466. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution B, auditor final payment to Boland's Excavating and Topsoil, Inc. for the terminal apron expansion. That's Ithaca Regional Airport, ID 6489. Out of the Government Operations Committee, adoption Resolution C, adoption of regular and supplemental reports of footings. That's the totals and assessment rolls, ID 6451. And then we have Resolution D, establishing county equalization rates. That's ID 6452. May I have a motion for the consent agenda, please? Julie Kiefer, seconded by Peter Stein. Those in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. I'm being pointed out that I skipped right over Joe's and Jonathan and Rick's reports, so I'm going to go right back to them and ask our County Administrator Joe Mariani if he has a report.
Explains the smiles I saw around the table when it passed right by. I'll be very brief. When we're here next, I will be presenting the 27 recommended budget to you. We're pretty knee-deep in the numbers right now, as you would expect. We did get a development that wasn't in our favor over the past few days. We received the last element of the tax cap calculation, and it dragged the cap down a bit. It looks like our cap is going to be about 2.22%. We had pegged it at 2.49% when we did the retreat. The cap formula is more complex, as you know, than most people understand. One of the elements in the equation relates to the sales taxes that are applied as credits against in the towns, credits against the county taxes. It's a weird part of the formula, and typically it doesn't make much difference. So you can kind of look past that usually when you're trying to estimate the cap. Well, because of what's happening with the sales tax, and has happened over the past year and a half, it did have a significant effect on the cap. It dragged it down. So, again, our starting point for the tax cap is going to be 2.22%. Now, the question has come up. Dan asked a week or so ago about the effect of that. Certainly there is a cap that if exceeded, it has to be approved by a supermajority. You've already taken action to do that. But over the past couple of years, it's been a money consequence of exceeding the cap. It would have denied taxpayers the tax freeze rebate check. Well, that program has come and gone. So in terms of 2017, again, we are respectful of how much we raise property taxes. But the rebate program will not apply in 2017, so that's not among the factors that we'll need to think about. Again, that doesn't mean that we're not sensitive to the amount we're raising the levy, but that's not a part of the package in 2017. In looking at how the sales taxes affected the property tax cap, it really does highlight how important the sales tax is to what's happening with our 2017 budget. To telegraph a bit what you'll see in the budget that I present, if you had just projected out sales taxes a couple of years ago and said, okay, if on average sales taxes are going up by 3.4%, as they were for the last 20 years, you would have projected sales taxes going steadily up. And then if you compare that normality to what we're experiencing right now and what we project in 2016 and 2017, the difference is over $4 million in sales tax revenue that under normal conditions would have been expected, would have been available to us to help balance our budget, would have paid our bills and reduced property taxes. But the sales tax situation has changed so much, at least it appears to, that it's a $4 million delta. So when we try to explain the budget that we will be presenting in a couple of weeks, that's certainly going to be a key factor in what's happening in our budget. It really is a transfer of burden from the sales tax to the property tax. That's a part of what we're dealing with. So, again, that's kind of a step ahead of where we probably need to be right now, but I did want to advise you of the tax cap And again, Rick will be talking about a good July. Let's hope that's a that's an indicator of a brighter future. I tend to look at the quarterly numbers, which are much more reliable than the monthlies, but again, it will be a large part of our budgetary story. Really quickly, the reentry plan that we've talked about at some length tonight is approaching your desks. A recommendation has been made about a contractor, a vendor, to provide those reentry services, a not-for-profit. That's going to be coming to public safety in the full legislature very soon, and that will be good to go the moment you approve it. So the preferred vendor, again, it will come to committee, is the Cooperative Extension. If that's approved, they are gearing up right now to have their folks ready to go the day after the legislature meets on September 6th. The last thing is the good news portion. I've talked about this the last couple of meetings. The picnic. Can't forget about the picnic. And over 300 people haven't. We've had 300 county employees who have signed up. That's really good. Leslin, this is what you've been talking about for years. So we are going to have a good turnout on August 29th from 3 to 7 at Stewart Park. So please try to come if you can. And that's my report.
Pray for rain any time, but...
yeah.
Okay, any questions for Joe? Let's go to Jonathan Wood, our county attorney.
I've asked for a brief executive session, but otherwise no report.
Okay, questions for Jonathan? Rick Snyder, Director of Finance.
I have just two brief items to bring to your attention. We were gearing up to do another bond and band issue in just a couple of minutes. We're postponing that a couple of months based on some conversations I've had with the financial advisor, county administrator, and our bond counsel. We may be pushing that bond offering off a little bit into the future, but we will be bringing new bond authorization resolutions to you in the next couple of months so that we get ahead of the schedule a little bit. And most of those bond resolutions will be the annual ones that you see every year, such as $1.2 million for road and bridge improvements, another $800,000 for the facilities capital maintenance program. Those are annuals that you see every year. We have the TC3 roof, which you've already authorized. That will be part of the next bond issue. And there's a couple others that may be new to some of you because they're being presented as part of the capital plan and the budget, which Joe will be presenting on September 6th. So I'm kind of getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. But I wanted the budget committee to know and the legislature that we are planning another bond and band issue, but it probably won't be taking place in September or October or even November as we originally planned. At this point, it's probably going to more look like December or January. So just to keep you in the know that we are beginning to work on that already. The second item I have to bring to you tonight is the sales tax report for July. If you look in your red folders for the sheet that I presented to you, you can see quite quickly that we did have a good July. The middle of the spreadsheet shows the county's portion, and it shows the percent change for the county was up 3.51%. That's year over year. That's compared to last July. If you move over to the right-hand column in the midsection under the county section, you can see that at the end of July, year-to-date distributions for the county portion total $18,446,647 compared to $18,544,882 in 2015. And that represents a decrease year over year of $98,000 or down 0.53%. So as of the end of July, compared to year over year, we're down about 0.5%. And that's all I have, Mike.
Questions for Rick. Martha.
Yeah, the outside the city numbers are really a complete turnaround from the rest of the year. You've got the month of July increase of 5.65%, whereas the rest has been really the
There are some abnormalities in that, in the way that they're computing that, and that's why we're looking at the, if you go over to the right-hand column, you see that those differences are pared down quite a bit. As of in the rest of the year, City of Ithaca is still leading the charge with the only one showing an increase of over 1%, and the towns and municipalities are suffering the worst. You can see they're down over 2%. But this July, in general, is quite a bit better than most of the months that we've had year-to-date so far.
Right, but the city, but the towns have been really the weakest all year. But this is 5.65%. So did something happen?
No, it's kind of a self-balancing thing. And as Joe said earlier, he doesn't really like to put a lot of stock in this until the third quarter. You know, the final reconciled third quarter comes in, and that will be right around the time that you're making your most important budget decisions in October.
Okay, I just thought maybe there was something you knew about. Okay.
Other questions? Dooley.
Rick, you said you're putting off going into the bond market a bit, and you said that decision followed conversations with, and you mentioned several things. One of them was our financial advisors, and I just wondered who that is.
They're called Financial Advisors and Marketing out of Syracuse, and they are Fiscal Advisors and Marketing out of Syracuse. We've used them quite a number of years, and at least as long as I've been here. And, of course, our bond attorney is Bill Marquardt.
Yes.
And I hesitated to give you what all the reasons why we were thinking about putting it off, but we do have a large band that comes due in October, $3.2 million. So we have to do something with that. Normally, we would just flip that into a bond and go long term. Because we have some other needs, and they're pressing and they're coming, and we'd like to do that bond issue maybe in December or January, we're thinking of leaving the ban out there for just 2 or 3 months longer so that we can do one big deal all at one time. But I need some advice, and we never really go to the markets in December, and I have to talk to the financial advisor to find out if that's a good time or not. If they say no, stay away from that, we won't be visiting the bond market in December. Then, of course, we have the election, and who knows what impact that might have in November. So stay tuned, and I'll bring you more information as I find out.
Rich?
I just had a follow-up to Martha's question. Do you historically see a dip in the city in the summer when the students aren't here? Or
I haven't seen that, no. But it's been so erratic the past 16 or 18 months between
okay.
the town and the county and the city. I really haven't been able to put that pattern, be able to confirm that pattern.
Okay, thank you, Rick. Let's go to standing committees, Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you. Let me direct reports. I had a conversation with Steve Estes today. Our direct reports, he has compiled all the information that people put together, and I am going to bring copies and of it to the Budget Committee meeting on Monday for the five members of the Budget Committee, and Steve and I will then distribute the same information the Budget Committee is looking at on Monday to the rest of you. And what it amounts to is, and the self-evaluation by the four directs, and then all the people who weighed in by using the online version of the direct evaluation. And I believe our top-out number was somewhere like 9 out of 15 or 14, so which is, you know, not a bad number. And what my plan is that as everyone looks at all the information, the four directs will get the same information we have from us. And I would like to schedule probably a two-hour meeting here And we would spend, and we will have each one of the four directs come in for a half an hour of session and do it all at once on one day here. And that seems to be the way I'm thinking that would be a good way to do it. And it would be an interesting conversation that we could have back and forth. No matter whether you weighed in or not, I would hope if you have the ability to be here for that meeting that you would come. And so the other thing is the first meeting of the expanded budget committee, and this is just for fun, will be held on Thursday, September 8th, after Joe puts his budget out on the 6th of September. So all of you had the schedule. I just wanted to remind people that would be the first date that we actually do the expanded budget committee.
I thought when you said just for fun, maybe you were just funning us.
No. Just moving it ahead. And I hope everyone takes a look at what the schedule is for September, October, and November.
Questions from Will and Martha?
So Jim, on this meeting with direct reports, I assume you're talking about having the four come in separately in sequence,
sure.
And that would not be a public meeting, correct?
No, it would not be.
Okay. And I'm sorry, did you say a date, or is that yet to be determined?
No, it's yet to be determined, because as I've looked at the September schedule of expanded budget committee meetings, I'm trying to figure out where would be a good day for all of you to show up, that you didn't have to show up 4 days in a row for some other committee meeting. So
thank you.
Might be a Sunday afternoon, but no. Martha, you had your hand up.
Martha's next, then Carol.
Yeah, you said the budget committee on Monday. That's the 22nd, right?
Right.
And that's here.
That's here.
At 3 or 3:30.
4.
At 4. Okay. All right. And I mean, maybe it would work better on scheduling if you broke it up, like, add a half hour or an hour to one of our budget meetings rather than trying to find a two-hour block. Just a thought.
That's an idea.
Carol?
Yeah, I was going to both ask what process you were going to use to reach out and see when we were available, and then to suggest that if not everybody, if it turns out, as is likely, that not everybody's available at the same time to come, if we spread them out, then more of us have an opportunity to be at least some of them.
I will check with, I'm going to work with Kathy, and we'll decide when. Obviously, it will be through email or whatever, what do you call it, the monkey system? Yeah, right, that system. And we'll try to find when we can have the most people here.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Leslyn being Claiborne, who chairs Workforce Diversity and Inclusion.
Yes, and I'm awake. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee did not meet since its last legislature meeting.
Questions? I suppose that's why you didn't meet, but that's all right. Old Library Committee also has not met. Let's go to Public Safety Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Yeah, Public Safety met. Not much to report. The next meeting is going to be this Thursday. The usual.
What was that? Here, I can't hear you. Could you speak in the microphone again,
please?
I'm sorry.
Next meeting will be this Thursday at the usual time.
Questions for Peter?
Peter, I see from the agenda that it's planned to be a shorter meeting, though. Is that
correct?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Health and Human Services Committee. Back to Leslie and me being Claiborne.
Indeed. Health and Human Services met yesterday. We had quite a few things to talk about. I'll give you my Cliff Notes version here. Let's see. We continued our discussion a little bit about T21. If for those of you who do not know or feel this in public, that tobacco use trying to increase the age which one can purchase tobacco products to 21 as opposed to 18. There is nothing, let me be clear, that's in the works for us right now. We don't have any resolutions. We're not making any changes. We are in the process of exploring sort of a more comprehensive look at this. So we will we'll be looking at what other counties have done and done successfully. A couple of counties mentioned to us by Ted Shealy is the Ulster County and the city of Newburgh. I think are two places. So we'll be taking a look at what they have done and seeing what we need to do, engaging in good conversation about what needs to happen here in Tompkins County, if anything at all. So just want you all to know. We heard from Sudale Hall on the state of child care in Tompkins County, and that was quite an eye-opener, some of the information we received for many of us, how child care facilities and in-home child care facilities get licensed, some of the regulations that are very prohibitive. You know, we talked a little bit about that. She mentioned, not a little bit, a lot. She talked about the number. She said there were 100, as of right now, about 100 or so regulated child care entities here in Tompkins County. They're both registered and licensed care facilities. They also have some legally exempt child care providers, which essentially means that you can provide child care for children, up to two children who are not your own. So that's something that can happen. We talked about this, I think, was very intriguing because we know that there's such a shortage of quality, affordable child care. And I put those two words together, not just quality, but affordable child care. And a lot of people are feeling the squeeze. She did say that it's easy to sort of get what's available, but hard to get the numbers of what the demand is. So they try to do surveys and ask providers, you know, how many people do you have, how many people you have in a waiting list, and so on and so forth. But here are some of the things that were interesting. She talked about what are called disqualifiers for child care agencies to receive subsidy. So if I qualify income-wise that I can get a child care subsidy, which means that the Department of Social Services will help to pay for my child care costs, that money will go to the provider. But for providers to qualify, they have to not be single-purpose providers. For example, if your camp is a softball camp and that's all you do, you wouldn't qualify. So if I wanted to send my daughter off to a two-week softball camp and that's all they do, you wouldn't qualify. Of course, it's not based on just your name, but it is based on the activities they're offered. So the camp might provide a list of activities that may include softball and swimming and something else, and then they will qualify. In order for many of the camps or daycare providers to qualify also, they have to provide a high-risk activity, high-risk includes something like swimming, which then has to be permitted. The health department has to issue that permit for them to do that. So in order for you to be eligible for the subsidy, you have to do something like that.
But it was a technicality.
Pardon me?
It's sort of a weird technicality.
It's weird. It's really weird. But in the whole thing of subsidy, Patricia Carey did weigh in, which I think is also very interesting, that in a recent sort of survey of where child care subsidies are by, I think, the federal government, it was noted that New York State's subsidy is still at levels that are well below others and where it should be, and it needs to go, hadn't gone up in a while. And that is something that needs to be introduced at state level. And so we'll be looking to engage our representatives at the state level to see what needs to happen for them to introduce legislation, whatever it is, to bring that subsidy up. She also talked about some of the other regulations that make things difficult. For example, child care providers. Every child care provider, teachers, you know, teachers, et cetera, must have at least 15 hours of a particular training. And child care facilities, which is one that really sort of got us, or houses, if you're doing especially in-house child care, must have at least two forms of egress or exit. And for people who may want to offer child care as an option in their homes, who might live in an apartment complex, for example, many of them don't have two forms of exit that are far enough apart from each other. So that sort of limits some of what they can do, especially if they want to provide affordable care for neighbors who are like them, who are low to moderate income. So, you know, for out of HHS, it brought up sort of a point that as we look at developers who are coming to us, who are doing housing and so on, that we might want to look at that very carefully as an area for consideration, so that we can improve or add to the child care stock that we have once people have housing that qualifies for that. Those were some of the key highlights of our discussion. Again, we will continue to do some research. Anna has graciously offered to work with Ted and others to bring as much information that we can review and bring to the committee and to the legislature some next steps, plan of action. And I think that's, yeah, like I said, the main things. So unless any committee members have something else they want to add, that's my report.
Anna?
Just one other thing, because it really was such a eye-opening report, that overall we are lacking sufficient child care, particularly for infants, young school age. And one of the things that she talked about, particularly for parents where the two parents have disparate, different work schedules, or they work at in non-traditional hours. So if you lay it all out, it's particularly a pressure on low-income families, where both parents have to work, and maybe they work at a hotel, or they work in food industry, and they have to start work at 4 in the morning or 5 in the morning, and work until sometimes midnight. And that really stuck out. And the other thing with the two forms of egress in a building is that, you know, that precludes, again, lower-income individuals who want to provide child care services in their homes and may not – they're disadvantaged because they don't have – the funds to have a large enough house that has two forms of egress that are separate from each other. So it just seemed the one thing that was really impressive to me is it consistently disadvantaged low income throughout the whole report that she was giving. So,
well, the Child Development Council continues to work on some of these issues to try to, you know, affect change with our legislators and with the powers that be that set regulations, of course, keeping in mind the safety of children being important. Following Sue's presentation, we had an opportunity to engage briefly with Lee Dillon from Tompkins Community Action, who, you know, let us know that TCA is working feverishly on a federal grant that will help support more informal registered license child care options in homes, et cetera, so people can apply for that. And so they're working on writing that grant so that monies will come into the community that will people can apply for to help develop their child care facilities, whether it's in their house or not. So that's one of the things she mentioned that TC is working on. The Child Development Council also has a small grant program that they offer mini grants to individuals, child care providers who need to make small improvements. For example, it might be that they need to
improve the cots because the regulations have now changed, and whatever they had, there were cots that worked before don't work anymore. Or New York State, I talked about a neighbor of mine who stopped doing child care because it just got too expensive because of regulations. I mean, every 2 years she had to change the size of gravel that was on the playground. And so that might be something someone can apply for a little bit of money, you know, for, you know, 300 and below to help make those kinds of improvements so that they can continue to provide the necessary child care and it doesn't become too burdensome. So that's available to folks who might be watching to please, I'm sure you already know, but just as a reminder, to check with the Child Development Council right there in Clinton Street and Sue Dale Hall and her staff for more information on how you can get some support for the little things that one might need to keep you licensed, registered, legal to provide the care for the children they're so desperately needed in this county.
Martha.
Yeah, and about that grant program, it's funded at a kind of low level by a couple of foundations, and it occurs to me it might be the sort of thing, like our bail, like the contributions we make on a periodic but irregular basis to the bail fund, OAR's bail fund, that if we had an allocation from the contingent fund, say, you know, one time, and to replenish that fund so that either the grants could be larger, because in many cases, like if you have to put up a fence, that's going to be more than $300. So I think it's a small thing that we could do that would really facilitate family providers to really start filling the gaps, and especially for infants and toddlers and non-traditional hours. That's where families prefer to have their kids. So I actually kind of nudged Joe about, you know, including a contingent fund, you know, amount in there, and I hope that we can consider that in the fall.
I didn't want to steal Martha's thunder, so her smiling about that, so I know that was coming.
Thanks. Thank you,
so that's my report from Health and Human Services. The conversation continues on municipal drug plan as well as T21, as I mentioned, and hopefully that we can do more around the issue of supporting child care in Tompkins County for our workers, not just those who are low and moderate income, but just about everyone, because the more money you make, the more expensive it is to care, especially if you're on a sliding fee scale. So just mentioning those things. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. I did notice that Schenectady County has now adopted a T21 law, along with Albany.
We'll be looking at theirs, too. Thank you.
Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Facilities and Infrastructure has not met since the last legislature meeting, and we will probably send out a doodle poll because the next meeting is scheduled for Labor Day.
It's Labor Day.
Questions for Dave?
You got to labor on Labor Day.
We're all mentioned here.
Dave, can you bring us up to date on Pine Tree Road?
The bridge is up. The road is open as far as I know. It was supposed to open on Friday.
Good news.
I have not been on it, but it's not open? Okay. It's not open.
Must be close, though.
It's got to be really close. Yeah, they expect it to open on Friday. I know that, but I don't know if they actually did. At any rate, they brought the bridge in and put it up in pretty short fashion, and it looks pretty good in the pictures that I've seen, but I haven't had the opportunity to get there yet myself.
Great. Any other questions? Let's go to Transportation Committee. I chair that. We did meet, and we spent some time talking about the discussion we'd had at the previous meeting with David Smith, the Department of Transportation Regional Director, Region 3, and I think mostly discussing about the lack of money that's coming to Tompkins County for projects and how we need to try to get in line for other money someday for some more important projects that might be coming down the scope. For example, was it 10 years ago we were having just to the MPO for local projects, about $48 million over a five-year period, and now we're only getting like $24 million for those projects. And those are the things we have to repair lights or make improvements to intersections and things like that, bridges. We talked about how we might go ahead with a Route 13 study, and again, that we would have to figure out how to pay for that. So that's one of the things we're going to be talking about in the committee in the future. The other thing we spent most of the meeting on was a presentation by our planning department. Ed Marks and Tom Knipe came and talked to us about the trail program in Tompkins County and which ones are being worked on, the Black Diamond Trail, the trail on Cuga Lake, the real strong effort in Dryden to extend the trail from the Varna area out to Freeville particularly. We looked at some of the areas of the county and said, where are the trails for Lansing and Groton? We aren't seeing them on the map yet. We're hoping that there can be on the old railroad rights of way or things like that. So it was kind of neat to see the various efforts that are coming together. And I hope that I'm kind of very, very proud of Dryden, which has put together a very strong trail committee. They're already out talking with property owners and have already secured some easements for the trails. And that's important. Questions? Will?
Yeah, Mike, I didn't quite hear you. You said you were talking about a study or funding for a study on, was it Route 13?
Yeah.
Route 13?
And possibly, right, possibly 96. We've got some issues on 96 as well.
Which part of 13?
What part of 13?
Which part of 13 are you talking about studying?
Well, we haven't focused yet, but certainly areas certainly from the city, maybe in the city, and then going certainly north particularly.
So you're talking about traffic counts on 13 or wait times or what do you...
No, well, it can be the traffic. It can be the delays that we're having, the increase in the number of vehicles because of more people commuting in from out of county, lack of housing, lack of affordable housing, all causing that. What we might need to do for improved bus transportation, whether we need to look at park and ride lots again, whether we need to look at additional lanes anywhere or overpasses or bridges, all of that could be on the table to look at. There hasn't been a real study of Route 13 in about 20 years, maybe more. Martha?
Actually, the planning department did I don't know if it's this what you're looking for, but they did a study about development along Route 13 from
that and I know that and you're exactly right, Martha, but that was basically when they were looking at the nodal development kind of thing, mm-hmm. which that project was about.
Right, but that was related to, you know, what the traffic patterns would look like and what the different options might. I mean, I think that should be a starting point for anything that happens.
I think that's a good point. Carol?
That's another follow-up. So who's the staff that would be working on what the study question should be and whether...
We're working with the MPO and planning department.
The MPO. Thank you.
Dave?
Yeah, Mike, I'd like to just make a couple comments about the airport, if I could.
Please.
They're going to start grooving the airport, I believe it's the 23rd. They'll be doing it after hours. That's from midnight to like 4 or 5 in the morning. And the FAA has made some serious changes in what they'll allow for ice on the runway, basically. And that's going to affect not only how they do their work at the airport, the frequency of it, how often they have to go out there, but they're also going to change some of the equipment requirements they may end up having to buy another one of these plow broom machines so that they have more than one. And overall across the United States, there's been a general softening in air travel. So that's one of the reasons that the numbers are down, but they're down across the country. And that's just some information I wanted to pass along.
Sometimes the computers break down too, don't they?
You think?
Martha?
Dave, I didn't hear the verb you said. You said they're going to start something after midnight.
Grooving. Putting the grooves in the runway so that the plane hangs onto it the way it should.
Okay. Yeah, that's groovy. Okay.
Right. Moving and grooving.
It's a 60s term, okay?
You won't know nothing about that, Martha.
Okay, anything else for Dave on the airport? All right, let's go next to Dan Klein, who chairs Government Operations Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you want to get grooving with the Government Operations Committee, come to the next meeting, which is Wednesday, September 7th at 3:30, right here in these chambers.
All right, questions for Dan? Go to Martha Robertson for Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee.
PDEC hasn't met since the last legislature meeting. We're meeting tomorrow at 3 o'clock. So you should all go home and start reading because, you know, it's the energy, it's the greenhouse gas emissions study report. It's really important. There are a fair number of, you know, graphs, so it's like pictures. Like, it takes some time to really read the graphs so you know what they're saying. But you can do it, but I hope that you will, so that we will have a solid discussion tomorrow. So that's the biggest item on the agenda for the meeting tomorrow, 3 o'clock.
Questions for Martha?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question, but planning just reminded me to say this is move-in weekend at Cornell. So we'll have lots of students and families, and let's all be kind and helping parents go down the right way, et cetera. So just as a reminder in planning, I mean, we know that there's several streets up on Cornell campus that are closed down. There's still lots of construction happening. So there will be a lot in our community, and hopefully that will help our sales tax numbers. Rick.
Carol?
Can I just ask Martha a quick question? Build on what Leslin said, there are hundreds of students moving into College Town on the blocks that are closed.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. I noticed in the PDEC packet, it looks like the same report is here twice. And are there two different years that those are for?
No, I think I haven't finished it myself. So,
we'll learn tomorrow.
Wait, the first one is the county community emissions, and the second one is the county government operations emissions.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, good. Thank you, Martha. Let's go to Julie Kiefer, chairs the Charter Review Committee.
Oh, Charter met yesterday, and we did not talk about the sheriff. And we have two more meetings scheduled in September. I hope we finish by then. I don't know what exactly the agenda will be on our Monday, September 12th at 9:45 is the next meeting.
Questions?
Mike, before we finish the meeting, I wanted to make a request for something to be included in the minutes.
Of this meeting?
Of this meeting, yes.
Go ahead.
I thought Diane Dawson's remarks were very well put together and informative, and I would like to see them in their entirety in our minutes, please.
Deborah?
Did I say Diane? Oh, God. It is late. Well, no.
Well, you've made a request as a legislator, and that can be done.
Thank you.
Mike, if we're going to do that, then we really should include everybody's.
Are you asking for everyone's comments to be put in the minutes, Mike?
Guess so. Yeah.
Then I guess nobody's, my feeling, we should put nobody's in there then. We'll just leave them in the notes. Unless folks disagree with me. Will?
I would support doing everybody's. I think the puppets turned out. I don't think we can, it's a reasonable
Martha?
Request.
Well, I think we usually, if somebody hands us a written copy, I think staff usually does include it. No?
I'm counting on staff to have the recording.
What's your pleasure for the group? Do you want them in the minutes or not? Are those in favor of putting them in the minutes? Raise your hand.
Excuse me, Mike. What? Putting what in the minutes?
We have a request to put the verbatim comments of folks that spoke about the sheriff's issue in the... We have a request from Mike Sigler, and we have a request from Dooley Kiefer. So my question is, who wants them in the minutes? Raise your hand, please.
Who wants what in the minutes?
All of it. There's 3, 4, 5. That fails. So they will be in the notes.
Well, verbatim, I hope, because usually the notes summarize also. And I was impressed with the cogency of the statement.
I was impressed with the line.
Carol?
Okay, I would like to at least see our usual practice of staff summarizing what people's points were, and if there are issues with that, the person can weigh in.
Well, they would just be done normally.
Yeah, normally, rather than nobody's comments.
All right. Minutes of August 2nd. Moved by Dan, seconded by Martha. Discussion? Anna?
No.
All in favor, please raise your hand. Dooley?
Aye.
Wait a minute. Dooley wants to say something about the minutes.
I believe in your red packets there was a proposed amendment to page 1 of the August 2nd minutes. Sherry Courthuis made the point of having information not just... Well, she wanted to have information at places like Loaves and Fishes. Her point was to not have information available just electronically. And I thought that was an important enough point to include.
Isn't that the kind of thing we usually have attached to the notes, that kind of thing, if someone feels it's different?
I'm making this as a suggested amendment to the minutes. I will put it in the notes. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the minutes.
Julie's moving an amendment. Does anyone want to second that? Seconded by Anna. Discussion on adding that to the minutes. Those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Wait a minute. I might be 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That passes.
9. Okay, it passes. It's fine. It passes.
All right. On the minutes as amended, all those in favor? Those opposed? And Julie, you still voting against?
Yes, I have.
And so am I.
And Jim's voting against, so we have 2 against. All right. Any unfinished business? Jim?
Yes. I'll be very quick. Governor Cuomo announced today $18 million awarded through the Southern Tier Agriculture Industry Enhancement Program. And Tompkins County received $620,000 going to 8 farms in the county for this program. And yesterday at Soil and Water, we heard about it, and we heard the names of people who are getting it, and they're all agricultural enhancement programs. And John Nagley and his staff helped every one of these people do their applications to get this money. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Jim, for that information. That's good news. All right. Now I need a motion to go into executive session to discuss litigation. We will come out of executive session and adjourn the meeting without taking action, is my understanding. Is that right, John?
Right.
Okay. Motion by Anna, seconded by Will. All in favor going to executive session? Those opposed? That's unanimous.